thank you very much for the presentation and the presentation. I hope to you today we did have some energy left to interact with today's discussion and presentations that we're just about to get. But yesterday we had two comments outstanding from yesterday. DG, you'll remember, just your audit action plan is to say what is it that you do or you have done from the last year's audit report, and also just to put us on your beautiful recommendations. Understanding very well that in your presentation today, that is where you'll be building on. We'll be taking it up and moving on from there. So it's just to remind you that in your presentation, just start from there, just 5 minutes, just to brief us, and then you get into your presentation, your annual report for this year that you are editing to. Thank you very much, DM, that you are with us. And we must try to be very strict with time today. By one, we must be done, because after lunch, the two entities are waiting to come in with their annual report too. So we have to take this meeting up. The latest should be one, but if it is possible, up until after 12, so that we can have our lunch, then our first one we can start with the entities. So much has been said yesterday. Where the end, we had FSP briefing us, just an overview on how the department is functioning, what when it comes to the issues of finances, how are you utilizing them, the way it is allocated, equitable, the provinces, and so forth. And also, we took a discussion with the AG's office, looking at the reports that they were presenting to us, what are the findings that they found when they were interacting with the department. And today we are dealing with the department when we are engaging most of the things again, the second yesterday. So that is why I'm saying we are building up on the discussions that we have taken yesterday. So I won't waste even much time. It's worth we are not even going for proper introductions today. I will just give an opportunity to you, DM, to open up today's discussion and let your team kick start with the presentation, and thereafter we keep the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Chairperson and colleagues. It's always good to be here. And you probably have observed moments of silence yesterday for the loss of our MEC, for education and share the grief that we feel and that we lost the colleague on the Eastern Cape. And quite interestingly, notwithstanding his illness, and he was quite ill, he made it a point to come to the last council meeting about 2 weeks ago. And that was the last that he probably to say goodbye to us. So we will miss him, and we convey our condolences to him and his family. I know the DG will be making a fuller presentation, and I could just say from where I've visited over the years, this wonderful team of women and men led by the very hardworking, diligent DG has made us reasonably proud of the fact that we've achieved stability in the education environment, but we have by and large achieved the targets that, in fact, in many instances exceeded the targets that have been set, and that the details that are contained in the report have indeed been verified by the AG's officers, and where there are deviations, these have been noted in the report. I would just like to reflect on what might not be in the report, so that when you receive the presentation, it's not a repetition, and I don't steal the thunder of the DG. The one area, given the importance of the fourth industrial revolution and the importance of technology and the artificial intelligence and everything else that goes with the fourth industrial revolution, digitization has become quite central to education. And what I can share with you, Chairperson and colleagues, is the fact that as a result of our collaborative efforts, and this cooperative and collaborative element does feature quite strongly in the report itself, we were able to successfully digitize more than 80% of the content of our textbooks from grade 1 to grade 12. And we did so at no cost to the taxpayers. Now, that in itself is a remarkable achievement, which simply means that we would be able to access that data, and we'd be able to do so if we do so on the platforms where we entered into agreements with the service providers free of charge. And education suddenly becomes not a public good, but a public interest where everybody has access to it. I think in that regard, probably South Africa would be the first to lead in taking education to another level where our resources and our information and our data can be shared by all and sundry at no cost. So I think that's something that we can share, we can take pride in. Perhaps the biggest challenge in that context would be the connectivity element. Whilst we are doing reasonably well with, from the last information we've received, it's certainly exceeding 65% in terms of connectivity for teaching and learning. It is our view that we should try very, very hard to achieve 100% at least by the end of this financial year. So that every child, especially children in the rural areas, has access to ICT and indeed can benefit from that. So that's one element that we raised, and you probably will hear more about the wonderful work that is being done in terms of ICT. But ICT itself, Chair, has to be blended with an important element of teacher development. Because if teachers do not have the ability to integrate ICT into the curriculum, are not able to utilize the pedagogical tools that are now made available to them, the wonderful opportunities that ICT presents might be counterproductive. And the reality is that children are much quicker, much more agile, and are able to navigate much more swiftly into that terrain. And teachers who do not embrace ICT and develop the appropriate skills and competencies might find that they are at a disadvantage and learners will be able to access and properly convey information much quicker and certainly much more powerfully than. So in order to become good facilitators for learning and teaching, that is an element that we are looking at. And I said I'm not going to talk about the report itself, but to say that we are firmly focused on ensuring that our 145 teacher resource centers, which most of which have highly sophisticated ICT, are also utilized as this important hub for teacher development. And we've encouraged our unions to also utilize that facility so that it is available for professional development, and we thought that's an important area that we have to look at. Then the next element that I would like to speak to would be about infrastructure, and I'd rather speak about the challenges rather than the achievements. I think the achievements, the narrative would come from the DG, and overall you would find that you have a report that you could be proud of, and indeed there is a certain steadiness and stability and progress within the environment itself, which is very, very encouraging. Now, infrastructure itself has to be looked at through a particularly different lens. When the Auditor General audits infrastructure, the audit team would not regard a school as complete until the certificate of completion is provided. So you might find a figure of completed school standing at 13, whereas in fact for actual purposes, the practical completion has occurred for 3-8 schools. And the reason is simply this, that the schools have been completed, They are staying for occupation. They have indeed been occupied for many, many months before the auditor general has even looked at the environment. Some contractors, some providers, a certificate of completion. And I thought that's something that you might want to reflect on as you look or as you consider the report. However, there were challenges in that particular area, and that's of course occasioned by the fact that because of the non-performance of the Department of Public Works and IDT in Free State in particular, we had to, in consultation with the relevant department and ministry, take over 15 schools, and the progress since we've taken over has been quite remarkable and astounding in terms of the schools that we've taken over and handed over to the DBSA. Then there were issues with regard to service providers, IDT in certain provinces, and there too we were very, very active in ensuring that we determined agreements and engaged a new agreement. And the mood and certainly the reality in terms of infrastructure delivery has changed dramatically. There is, I think Dr. Whittle is shaking his head in agreement, but he will tell you that not only do we look at the reports, we basically engage personally as a ministry with the stakeholders, with the support obviously of the department. And there's incredible movement in relation to sanitation, in terms of water provision, and we've done remarkably well in terms of electricity. So those are elements. Now, with regard to the infrastructure, the acidic problem itself, we are now faced with this reality. We've accelerated delivery to the extent so that we don't have sufficient resources to pay for it. We literally have to slow down, because if we don't slow down, we would be building more than 75 schools in the financial year, but we won't have the money to pay. And that is the kind of contradiction. So we have made an appeal to Treasury to say, look, we understand the constraints of government. Please come forward and assist us. And the indications are that we would indeed get some support from Treasury, which would basically enable us to certainly achieve our target of 50 and possibly exceed that if the funds are made available. So in a nutshell, we would basically have delivery of almost a school, if possibly more than a school per week in this financial year. The sanitation issue itself, you probably are aware that the President himself has taken the responsibility of driving this particular process. We were able to convene stakeholders, and they've been very magnanimous in general, generous. And just in that fundraising exercise, we were able to arrange a little more than 100 million rand in cash and in kind for that particular project. But we've also dedicated resources from a provincial perspective as well as a national perspective. And as we speak now, quite a considerable amount of work has been done in this area, and you will see the report. And the difficulty with these reports is you speak about the 2017-2018 year, but then there is a blank about the current year. Now, it might mean a few months, but what has happened in the past 6 months, for example, would certainly color the narrative in a very positive way, because you could see that actual work has been done in this particular area. It did not require the intervention of the President before work had indeed occurred. And I would I suggest that when the DG or Mr. Mafoko speaks to it, he would speak to the report, but also reflect where we are at this point in time. In other words, between the end of the financial year, the last financial year, and now, how have we moved forward? So that in real time, our colleagues are able to say, well, look, we are satisfied or we are not satisfied with the progress that has been made. The last element, and this would be the last share, I expect the time constraint, is the important reality, and certainly, you know, in the centenary of Mandela and of the Kina Sisulu, I've just got my t-shirt, we just, in the National Express, were taking a photograph to commemorate this early and,
should have brought some.
But it's something that we did this morning with the President and the entire National Executive. But the issues of social cohesion, non-racialism, unity, nation building becomes very, very critical and central. And we do see trends in the education environment where there may be tendencies to polarize rather than integrate. So we still have to, in our environment, given the realities and the legacies of the past, work very, very hard at ensuring that there is cohesion that occurs. That means, amongst other things, we have to confront the reality of non-racialism, which is our constitutional responsibility. We have to deal with issues of equity and equality. We have to foster and promote the values of containing our constitution, including that of tolerance, of virtue, respect, human rights, etc. And we pay particular attention to that. We do so through our MOOC competition. We do so through our assessment, where we dedicate song to our heroes and heroines of yesteryear, and try to foster cohesion in a very, very serious way. And we've been expressing our concern that these astounding events are hardly attended, or there is hardly a participation by the minority. And if you want to build a nation and have this huge, huge population of learners, you have to ask why, given the extraordinary quality of what we're seeing out there, you find parallel structures for other minorities. That is something that we have to speak about. But in our dialogue, education dialogue, we've been speaking about decolonization, we've been speaking about non-racialism, we've been speaking about equality and equity, and I think we must continue to do so. So we must foster and promote it rather than encourage division. And we have a collective responsibility as political parties and as colleagues to ensure that that cohesion exists. But to say to you that is a focus that we can't lose, because the three legs on which our education system stands, that of knowledge, that of skills, and that of values and attitudes. And lastly, the DG will, I said it was going to be my last point, but I can't forget this one. Say, linked to that is also the importance of the promotion of indigenous African languages, and colleagues, the DG will tell you how the ministry, how it has emphasized this particular element, and it's not going to allow any further opportunities for any delay in terms of universal application, because it's critical and necessary that we do so. I imagine you will also receive a report of history itself, but that's part of it. But the last is perhaps an exciting opportunity, and this is the fact that we've recognized the value of having a 3C system of education. Last year, for the first time, our grade 12 had written in the vocational stream, which offers civil engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical and technological engineering. And this year, that's a huge pilot in terms of the 26 or 27 subject choices for the occupational stream, which is going to be introduced incrementally from next year. Which means that what we have thought about and reflected about not long ago is indeed a reality in our education environment. And it's something that I think the report doesn't say too much about, but it's something that we can celebrate as an important step forward. And as we do so, you know, our commitment to inclusive education is something that's critical and necessary, and I think should enjoy the focus of everybody. So those who are definitely able, children with disabilities, must be paid attention, but I do recognize that the report does reflect on that. These are my opening statements, Chairperson, and I'm sure that DG will provide you with a much more comprehensive report. But thank you very, very much for the opportunity. I will try to stay here as long as I can. Thank you.
Thank you very much, TM, and we will rely on Honorable Bosho to make sure that she contains you.
Well, he doesn't want you to sit next to me, so I have a bit of a problem. You put my hand back.
Thank you very much, TM, for those opening words. You may proceed with the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The Audit Action Plan and the BRRR could quickly be summarized by Mrs. Mulelepo and Mrs. Mula, respectively, so that I get into the IMA report.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. The presentation has been facilitated, so I will try to move very quickly through the report. I will just focus on the progress made since the last presentation in March to date. So I'll just focus on the progress column. I will just start on slide 6. The progress on ICT commitment. Commitment register. Just to indicate that the commitment register is fully supported by a contract with the service providers. Members will remember that we had issue of documentation previously regarding the commitment register. This has been resolved. We have all the documentation. And then with regard to accruals, to achieve the completeness of accruals, commitment agents are required to provide.
Can I tell you a little bit? I can see Honorable Kosovo. This is the presentation.
Okay, which slide? Because I see
it's saying 3 slide 6. But I think it also should be projected so that it becomes easier for us to follow. Thank you.
The second issue was
can you switch off one mic?
The understatement of accruals, and with this one, implementing agents are required to provide duly authorized leave certificates by accredited professional service providers twice a year for the interim and year end. And then on the next slide, slide 7, and statement of guarantees, implementing agents are required through the DG's office, DG's infrastructure meeting. To provide DBE with reports on the possible disputes with contractors or PSPs that may result in contingent guarantees. And the contingent liability audit findings have been resolved through engagement with legal services of various implementing agents. And then on the next slide, slide 8, MOAs with implementing agents not renewed or extended on time. All MOAs have been properly authorized by both DBE and implementing agents. And then the next slide, slide 9, shows the dates on which the MOAs were signed and they will expire. And that is reflected on slide 9 and slide 10. And then if you go to slide 11, the issue was that the department takes long to transfer assets completed in terms of Section 42. The reconciliation of projects with approved final accounts against the financial system is performed before transfers of assets, and the infrastructure unit is continually in process of engaging the custodian department to accept the completed assets. And then slide 12, reconciliation or update of immovable assets, the report on assets and use is prepared and the asset register is updated on a monthly basis. There was an issue on limitation of scope on activity projects, which is on slide 15. Archived information has been availed to the AG, who were also permitted to audit some of the information required at affected implementing agent site. Then the next issue was on page 14, overstatement of recoverable expenditure and non-compliance with the Treasury for claiming with EU donor projects. The progress that was reported in March was that there were 4 projects which were incorrectly processed for donor projects and were moved to departmental appropriation funds. So this was completed and the EU allocation, the EU contract has come to an end and there will be no new issues that are related to the EU funding. Non-compliance with SCM processes by various implementing agents. Now the progress is that in addition to DBE officials being part of IA procurement processes, the DBE is considering ways of holding IAs accountable for non-compliance to SCM prescripts. And then the next slide 15, understatement of intangible assets. Lurid FFM Teams and MST. Invoices from CETA are split between development and maintenance costs, and this is now recorded accordingly. And then the next issue was vacant positions in SCM and other organogram related matters. Here it can be confirmed that the post of director SCM was advertised, and there was no suitable candidate in the last round of interviews earlier this year, but there were interviews that were held on the 4th of October, and appointment will be approved shortly. And then the post of the CFO post has been upgraded to a DDG level, and it was filled on the 6th of August. Post of DDG Infrastructure, Chief Engineer and Quantity Surveyor has also been advertised and should be filled during the third quarter of 2018-19. And the non-compliance with the requirement of public service, the department relies on verification reports from SSA, and these are often delayed because of heavy workloads at the SSA. The department follows up on requests to SSA, and this has not helped to accelerate processes. On the next slide, slide 16, departmental policies and procedures are not reviewed. The policies have been reviewed, and this is even reflected in the audit report, the current audit report, that there has been an improvement. And policies are reviewed annually, some are reviewed every second year, according to what has been prescribed. And the department also reviewed the petty cash policy to align it with the VAT increases. And then written quotations were not obtained when procuring goods and services. This was related to the Karibude project, and the project came to an end in 2017-18 financial year. Lessons learned on this project will be implemented in future projects of the department. And then HR approval not obtained for performing remunerative work. The recommended declaration already forms part of the letter of acceptance of goods and assumption of duty. A circular informing officials of the legislation and rules related to this issue has been sent to staff. And then on the next page, slide 18, SPN suppliers in which present in service of other state institutions have an interest. The central database, CSD, is used, but it's not foolproof. Discussions have been held with the AG, and they have advised that treasury should be approached to consider better ways of dealing with this matter. Discussions with treasury are pending. And then risk management, consolidated risk report for strategic risk and operational risk is approved by the DG. And all branches have submitted their quarter one progress report towards the action plan. Then the next slide is showing the progress on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This report on fruitless and wasteful expenditure is slightly different from the one that is included in the annual report because of the timing issue. But that is the information. But maybe this one we can look at the one that is in the annual report because it's the latest one. And then proportion of principals who have signed performance agreements. An agreement has not been finalized by the Education Labor Relations. Job descriptions are currently used for reporting purposes. DBE provided PEDs with a template for reporting principals who have find a job description. Percentage of learners who completed the whole curriculum coverage true for math and English first additional language for grades 3, 6, and 12 have been developed. Sampling guidelines are being developed to assist CED with implementation of the indicator. Chair, these are the performance indicators, and the progress is
reflected
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and Honorable The Audit Committee presentation, if we go to slide 29, or just after the first page of the slide, Audit Committee did their oversight in terms of the internal and the external audit during the year. And as part of their responsibility, and also made the recommendation in terms of improvement of control. And the risk committee in the department met for 3 meetings in terms of during the year internal audit, we did a full risk assessment for each branch, directorate by directorate, and those risk registers were also discussed in terms of the evaluation of the risk and the appropriateness of identification of the risk, meaning that to look at the risk assessment process that was monitored, we are still continuing to monitor the risk management process. Branches have submitted quarter one. And the quality on the financial statement, there was an review, internal audit did review the financial statement, the interim, and we gave management areas where there are gaps in terms of the interim and the end of financial statement. Then the next slide is 4 lines of defense, where we just highlighting the different levels. I think members can look at that. The first level is management, where managers have to manage their risk. On a day to day, we just explain the different levels of assurance in terms of the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales. And the second level of assurance is done by either a compliance unit or the risk management function. And the third line of defense is the internal audit looking at and providing assurance to management in terms of the risk and the controls. And the fourth level is the external auditors, in our case is the AGSC. And the activities that the audit committee and internal audit conducted during the year, as I've already indicated, we've got the external chairperson and there were meetings, and the policies and the strategies. The risk committee reviewed the strategies to ensure that managers own the risk, and even communication in terms of the understanding of the risk management in terms of PFMA, those are communicated during the risk committee. And monitoring of the risk action plan, we are done this current financial year, because the last financial year we did a whole process in terms of the risk assessment. And the audit committee also held the workshop with the AGSA, and also there was a workshop with management and AGSA in the last financial year in terms of reviewing the findings that were raised in the last audit, in terms of looking at the audit action plan that management prepared, the actions that have been put in place. AG also advised in terms of the processes that management needs to strengthen. And we also, the activities also, it was, all audit committee did an oversight in terms of quarterly meetings that are held to look at internal audit reports. From internal audit, we did review the quarterly information for the department that is on the ATP for all the quarters, quarter one, quarter two, and quarter four. We also conducted the supply chain process at implementing agents with specific DBSA and Bulatra in the COPO. This financial year will also be intensifying to look at IDT and Bulatra in Eastern Cape and KZN, and DBSA also will be also included. So we have a full team that will look at the supply chain to actually look at the compliance processes for our implementing agents to minimize the reoccurrence of irregular. So RCB will also conduct the follow-up in terms of the AGSA and the internal audit report in terms of commitment, contract supply chain progress report in terms of monitoring the projects that come through the PSU. And we also looked at the DORA process in terms of transfer compliance to the TED from DBE. We also looked at the second chance program in terms of the program itself in full, whether there's databases and records management process in terms of when we register letters of second chance and even the information that fits to performance information. We looked at the examination process for how we appoint markers and moderators and the compliance in terms of the process and the distribution process in terms of security and controls when we distribute question papers. We looked at the tender process. The department during the year embarked on the massive advert on tenders for ACD, which most appointments were done in February, March this year. We worked with management to assist in terms of the technical evaluation committee for those tenders. And we have already highlighted that the audit committee held meetings. There were six meetings during the financial year. And in this current financial year already, there were two meetings that were held. We've got one coming in October, end of October. And Shepperson also had a special meeting with the ACD team, particularly on their audit action plan to follow up. The next slide is on challenges that we have identified, that there needs to be strengthening of quality for effective assurance by every line function in terms of performance information and the financial information that comes through, because there were still other gaps that need to be strengthened, and capacity and leadership in finance and supply chain was enhanced by elevating the CFO to DPG level. And prior audit findings, there were some that were addressed, but they were not fully addressed, so that management will be working with them in this financial year to clear some of the gaps. And effective follow-up with implementing agents needs to be strengthened. We sit also, internal audit, we sit also in the meetings, on monthly meetings, where implementing agents, they provide a quarterly report. We also do follow-up and make questions where we see control gaps in their process. In terms of the regularity, I think I can skip the next slide. It's ACD, material misstatement, irregular. And in terms of irregular, the department has the committee that looks at the investigation. And other challenges would be for late submission of practical certificates. Others have already indicated misstatements. And in terms of the ACD actions, I've already highlighted that we also, in the current financial year, we're intensifying the risk management process and the internal control that are there. Well, we've already given them the internal control questionnaire to assess the extent of control that are in place for intensifying where there are gaps. And there are monthly, we'll do monthly reconciliation and monitoring in terms of the audit action plan will report to the DG for any discrepancy. I will skip other slides, Chair, because some have already touched on them. But basically what would need to work with management is to intensify on quality assurance on the submission of performance information and ATSA, and I'm saying in the financial statement before we submit.
Thank you very much. Members, that was the audit action plan emanating from 2016-17, of which now, as we are going to be getting into the annual report on the performance of the department 2017-18, we must find some of these things that are in this presentation featuring in this report that we're going to be engaging on right now. So whatever we have heard from this update, is that going to be presenting, would be, you know, connecting to what is going to be presenting. Then when we open up for discussions and questions, we'll make sure that whatever has been presented on the update, yeah, we find the satisfaction on the presentation that we are getting into now. And what DM has said is, even on this 2017-18 report, but we'll be getting even an opportunity where the presentation will be telling us as to say how far have they moved now, even to this financial year that we're in. But our report basically for 2017-18, where we see everything that has been said, featuring in the report. On that note, can I then give the DG to lead with this report on the performance for 2017-18, then after that we'll take discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Deputy Minister and colleagues. Chair, the presentation has got about 117 slides. I'm going to try and run it as though I'm speaking to 30 slides. So I'm going to go quickly and just hit the punchline, so to say, as we usually say it in the department. The presentation would look at achievements of the department in terms of the year under review, look at the performance of the department against the planned targets and predetermined objectives as contained in the annual performance plan, and lastly then look at expenditure as contained in the annual report. Well, the presentation outlines just the overview of the service delivery environment and contract program performance and annual financial statements. Well, the annual performance plan contains a summary of what has been aligned to the delivery agreement of outcome one, of improving the quality of basic education, and the action plan to 2019 to the realization of schooling 2025. The programs are the five programs that are indicated there. This provides just a summary of our achievements in terms of the year under review, but comparing it to the previous financial year. Of course, our story is told in numbers, as you can see, honorable members. The pie chart confirms that, in terms of numbers, there is some upward trajectory in terms of our performance. The overview of the delivery environment and context, well, the legislative mandate, we isolate the National Education Policy Act as the paramount legislation that guides our policy development, monitoring and support, in particular Section 3 and Section 8 of NEPA. Of course, the role of DVE is to provide leadership of provincial efforts as outlined in those documents. We then, of course, look providing technical leadership oversight, setting and maintenance of norms and standards as contained in Section 3 of NEPA, as I indicated before. And we are guided, of course, by the National Development Plan, the Medium-Term Strategic Framework, and the Implementation Plan of the NDP, and of course the action plan to 2019 towards schooling 2030. We look at six areas that are contained in the medium-term strategic framework. And these six areas are the following: improving quality of teaching and learning through development and supply and efficient utilization of teachers, improving quality of teaching and learning through provision of adequate quality infrastructure and LTs, and improving assessment for learning to ensure quality and efficiency in academic achievements, expanded access of early childhood development, and the improvement of grades R, of course, looking at going beyond grades R, as we all know that there's a decision taken by the ruling party, and we are making preparations in that direction for 0 to 4 year old. Strengthening accountability and improving management of schools, community and district level. What is very cardinal are the ministers meeting with district directors taking place on a quarterly basis, guided by the four themes of the department, which we also shared yesterday during the State of Readiness report. Partnership for education reform and improving quality, and we'll see more of this when we'll be, of course, dealing with program five, of activities that are carried out in this regard. As I've indicated here, that our story is wired in numbers. When we're starting with bachelor's, that we are able to record in the year under review, we moved from 22.6% to 23.5%, and the detail is contained there. Funza Lushaka Brothers moved from 14,000 and moved to 15,000, and the details are also shown there. Well, in terms of quality coordinating team, this team continues to monitor the situation in Buwani and support the efforts by other stakeholders who have helped us to harvest the order and stability that still obtains there. Delivery of grade R books, we've been able to achieve 100% there. Again, volume 1 and 2 of web books, we've managed to increase the number from 56 million to 59 million, as indicated there. In terms of employees who attended skills development and training program, the numbers have also increased from 200 to 300. Young people who were recruited were out of school and school going, the numbers have also increased from 951 of promissory notes that were, or letters that were issued, to 1,216. Graduates from Lushaka, graduates which were placed in post, the number increased from 67% to 89%. And shares, this will also go a long way in addressing the notion of the exodus of teachers from South Africa to other countries and so on. If you match the number of graduates vis-a-vis the number of teachers in the country, the figures are quite very nice to look at. Clearly shows that we're producing more teachers than teachers even who leave the system overall. Young people who are appointed into the system, we increase the number from 14,000 to 15,000, as you can see there. And teacher education programs which were evaluated, the number increased, it moved from 180 to 95, which is slightly lower than the year before. And then, in terms of educators that are signed up for participation in the CPTD management system, the numbers also increased from 177,000 to 221,000. In terms of the PLCs, the numbers effectively remain the same from the prior year and this year. The TUC, we moved from 89% to 90%. And honorable members will remember that this is a program involving teacher development program by five teacher unions in the department, and that has been going quite well in supplementing the teacher development program and activities that the department in the sector are carrying out. MSD grant performance, we've now moved from 44 schools which were supplied with ICT resources such as laptops and tablets to 704 schools which were supplied with such. Workshop, where supplied with equipment and tools and machinery and so on, we've moved from 223 to 232. As the numbers indicate there. Of course, the physical science laboratories which were supplied with consumables, we moved from 296 to 1,020. In terms of the National Senior Certificate, we've seen a phenomenal increase particularly from part-time candidates. The numbers in terms of full-time candidates went down slightly, as the numbers show there. Well, in terms of the overall performance of the qualification, we moved from 72.5 to 75.1, which is an improvement of 2.6% as indicated there. And of course, if we look at the combined results of November and supplementary exams, it shows an improvement of 70.7 to 72.1 and moving up to 75.1 to 76.3. What that means in terms of 2018, I'm not sure, Chair. Only faith can tell. I don't want to venture into prophecy, as I said yesterday.
Well, I'm
not qualified to prophesy. I still have to learn how to prophesy. Nutritionist meal, DDE provided nutritionist meal, again, increasing the number from 20,300 primary schools and secondary schools, and moving it up to 21,277 schools, which reaches an average of 9.2 million learners from 9 million learners. And as I said, our story is told in numbers. And I'm sure, given the fact that public representatives work with numbers, I'm sure this will come in handy in analyzing our performance. Well, in terms of challenges and remedial measures, DBE continues to pursue policy on the succession plan with respect particularly to increasing the number of female officials and SMS members, but also of knowledge, we've also prioritized the appointment of female colleagues. Chair will attest to some of the new appointments that were made where female has been considered. But it's an area that we're not doing so well in, and we intend accelerating our efforts there. The plan is in the final development stage and will be finalized and approved in 2018-2019 financial year. In terms of compliance of some elements of experimental research and evaluation plan, as well as MPET. We're also looking at improving our performance there. The previous year we didn't do that well in terms of MPET. DBE managed through ADBOB, which is an NGO foundation, to secure full sponsorship for the National Sailing Bee program. And this NGO is even assisting in other activities in curriculum as well. Well, in terms of Free State, Cape and then Northwest, which did not train the ECD practitioner towards the national qualification framework level 4 as required, letters have been sent to the HODs to address this anomaly. In terms of the second chance metric program, delayed as indicated in the report, when we reworked the design and I'm sure that the weaknesses that are identified are indeed addressed in the 2018-2019 financial year. And then in terms of teachers should have not taken out class for other activities and time for capacitating teachers. The matter has been handled with the PEDs and teacher unions on a 3-month notice for programs during these vacation programs, so that teachers are made available for these capacity building programs. Collaboration and strengthening of the partnership will be intensified. And in terms of part B, which is program performance, Chair, I'm not going to cover everything. I'll just be looking at performance in terms of targets and predetermined objectives. The summary of the performance program, I'm going to jump in the interest of time and assume that honorable members would have read the summary that has been provided. This program is actually about providing support, administrative support, to the other programs of the department that are focused on the core business of service delivery in the department. Well, in terms of the target 1.1.1, target has been fully achieved up to 1.1.3. Slight variances of 0.09 and no variance of deviation in terms of the second target there. And the third target is a positive variance of plus 20. As I said, I will just give the summary there. We give details in terms of how we progress, filling the advertised post and so on, and leave it for members. The same applies to, you know, how we dealt with invoices in terms of 30 days and so on. The disposal committee, I leave those to honorable members to interrogate. The same applies to research of interest is our continuation with any great reading in this regard. We moved to Mpumalanga from Northwest, very interesting findings, which were also shared with the portfolio committee, looking at the role played by parents, the role played by coaching, and the role played by training. And the research found that coaching had a major impact compared to the other two. And we're looking at how we utilize that going forward. I will then jump and go to program two, just to show some of the major activities there. The journal which was launched in the department to capture the work that is done by officials in the department in terms of the work that is done there. Communication plays a very important role. The articles released, responding to inquiries, media advisors or advisories that are provided, interviews that we take, articles that we issue to either initiate discussions or respond to some of the issues that come from the general public and from other sectors. The basic education sector in Khotla, we provided your pictures and chair as evidence in this regard in terms of the basic education sector in Khotla. because capturing you, the deputy minister and the minister, will come in handy in terms of portfolio of evidence. The round table on deans of education, I must say, I'm very excited that you are beginning to find each other with HEIs. We used to view them as ivory towers and us operating somewhere. We've had a number of engagements, and I can say that there are very good efforts from both sides to begin to find each other. And we believe that it will bode well for the education and training system, although we are two separate sectors, but we constitute one education and training system of the country. So we've had a number of meetings where we are working together with HEI, and I thought it's important just to highlight that. Program two, the core business of the organization, curriculum development, assessment of policies, monitoring and support, and implementation. Well, the first targets have been met there. There are no deviations, so I won't have any comment. The same applies to these ones, Chair, up to 2.2.3. The targets have been met without any deviation. And the same applies to these ones up to 2.3.3, we have achieved without deviation. And of course, again, the same applies to these ones up to 2.4.2, no deviation, we have achieved what we needed to do. A slight underachievement of a deviation of only minus one, as you can see, simply because, of course, Western Cape and Northwest, as indicated there, did not really come to the party as expected. And then 2.4.5 up to 2.5.1, we have achieved. It's a nice positive deviation of 53,780 there in terms of that target. As I said, the summary of the program I'll just glaze over and leave it to honorable members to go through. A lot happening there in terms of inclusive education, as honorable members can see. ICT has also covered in my opening remarks of the Deputy Minister, development of digital content, provision of ICT equipment and resources to provinces through the MFT grant, and also curriculum work that has been happening between the line function and provinces. Program three, this program is about promoting quality teaching, institutional performance through the effective supply, development, utilization of resources. Again, 3.1.1 has a target up to 3.1.2 has been achieved with a nice positive variance of 26.9% and 16. Again, going to 3.2.1. The target has been achieved with a nice positive variation of 1,634. And 3.1, unfortunately, this one has not been achieved. And our story has been told throughout the year to honorable members around the diagnostic report, the diagnostic tool, the self-diagnostic tool, and the issue as explained before, unions have taken a particular position given the involvement of a particular company which was associated with privatizing education. And I must say that this is a stance that is taken by Education International, and therefore all five teacher unions in South Africa are part of Education International. And they took this stance because they had to align themselves with Education International. But going forward, Chair, we have developed our own self-diagnostic tool, working with Sasol Foundation, developing our own tool, which will be owned by the department and no longer be privately owned by a particular service provider. I've already started to engage unions, and they've indicated their willingness to work together with us going forward. If we deal with the issue of the ownership of the self-diagnostic tool going forward. So that has been the major glitch accounting for this underperformance in this area. As we can report that the variance from 3.3.1, a variance of 1,943, the next one a variance of 1,352, and then the one following 1,607, and then the biggest variance, which is in 3.3.4, 6,330. But I must say that the pre- and post-test that I'm mandatory to all educators do compensate for this variance. And for almost all training activities that are carried out either by DBE or provinces, pre- and post-test are administered. And we have shared evidence with the Auditor General of the pre- and post-test, and that information has been acceptable to the Auditor General with certain recommendations, because pre- and post-test teachers are allowed to remain anonymous so that we encourage more and more participation in this pre- and post-test. Well, the next one, Chair, the targets have been achieved with no major deviation or variation. And again, the program, the major achievements of the program are summarized as indicated there. So in the interest of time, I will move straight to program four. This program is about promoting quality and effective service delivery in the basic education system through planning and implementation and assessment. Well, the target, which is on 4.1.2, it has been achieved with a positive variance of 3,335, and then the next one has been achieved with no deviation there, and then 4.2.2 achieved again with a variation of 28, and then 4.4.1 achieved with a variation of 0.5, and then 4.4.2 a slight partial achievement and a variation of 0.3. As indicated there, it has to do with provincial data warehousing having been rejected by LURIC, and this is one area where we've been qualified from performance information of programs. So I'm highlighting it already, Chair. And the line function is working around the clock, even before we could finish the audit cycle. The line function started to engage with provinces to address this glitch. We view this quite seriously, because we use the data on learner numbers to inform our funding, to inform everything that we do in the system, even determining the number of polls, etc. And that's the summary of the program, program four. That's the summary of that part of the program. National assessment and public examinations. What is of importance is that we've now concluded the systemic evaluation study. We are starting with the pilot this year and full implementation next year. This is the assessment which will replace Anna. Going to replace Anna. And then we are working on the summative assessment and the diagnostic assessment, working with teacher union. And this part is done and dusted. Anna will be replaced by annual, rather the systemic evaluation study which will be carried out on a three-year basis. International assessment, well, we just reflecting on TILS there, and I must just indicate that preparation for TIMS are afoot. Next year, TIMS will be administered, and hopefully a year or so after that, we'll be getting the results of TIMS. Setting and the moderation of question paper, we presented extensive information on that in terms of aid and readiness yesterday. Right, as the Deputy Minister indicated, this is one area that continued to haunt us like an adamant ghost, simply because our targets are not empirically and historically not properly informed. The difficulty is that we can only change this chair outside the medium-term strategic framework scope. Until we are done with the medium-term strategic framework, these targets remain. We all agree that you can tamper with the technical indicators, but the targets will remain, and we're looking at changing this target in 2019-2020 ATT. And I hope they'll be better informed, because we'll have historical data that will be able to properly inform our targets going forward. But as the Deputy Minister said, and the figures will prove later on as I continue with the presentation, there's more progress in ACD than we had the previous years, although in terms of the targets, we're indicating those variances that I think Jesus said. And that's the summary. And simply saying we've overstated our target. The difficulty is that we are in this program until the end of the 5 years. And beyond the 5 years, we should be able to work out numbers that are empirically and is better informed by historical data. And this is what I just reflecting on the progress there in terms of a city, inappropriate schools, sanitation, water and electricity, but also as the Deputy Minister requested, just reflecting on progress in terms of different stages of each of the projects. We can report that out of the three 367 projects that are to be implemented, 67 are at design, and then 64 are at 25%, and you've got 10 at 25% and 49%, and you've got 6 at 50% to 74%. And you've got 30 at 79%, and projects in construction overall, you can see, is 110, and the number of projects completed, the number that is provided there is 200. And we're providing some of the examples of the schools that are completed in the Bopo in terms of sanitation there. This is one school, and this is another school that is also completed in the Bopo in terms of sanitation. And then when it comes to 4.5.1, we've achieved that target with a positive variance of 22, and then 4.5.2, we have achieved that target with no deviation of variance. And of course, 4.5.3, a slight underperformance of minus 5% of the district directors who had to be assessed there. And the summary is provided there of the work done in terms of that part of program 4. That's the summary, quite extensive work that has happened there in that program. And that part of the program, that's the work that has been carried out. And then moving to program 5, which is the last program. This program is about developing policies and programs to improve quality of learning in schools. In other words, supporting the implementation of the curriculum. But I must indicate upfront that what is historically deemed to be soft issues in education will be located here. But the soft issues have become hard, maybe because we have not paid enough attention to soft issues. I'm talking about school safety. I'm talking about social cohesion and values in education, as the Deputy Minister said. I'm talking about curriculum enrichment programs and so on. And this is a program where all of those are included. 5.1.1 achieved with a variance of 75. 5.2.1 a deviation or a variance of 63, simply because unfortunately Mpumalanga did not come to the party on this one, and therefore the contribution of Mpumalanga has not come in handy there to ensure that we fully achieve that target. 5.2.2, we have achieved that target with a very good positive deviation of 523, and of course 5.3.1, we've achieved that one, also with a variation of deviation of 1. And that's the partnership activities, the National ABC, Montessori School, ISS Forward, and some of the things that the Deputy Minister referred to. Sunland, King Motsepe Schools Cup, National Championships, they are also indicated there as part of the activities that you find in that program. Protocol for the prevention and management of corporal punishment incidents in public schools is also provided there. The anti-bullying activities to deal with bullying, which is anti-bullying activities. That's the work that they're doing there. The 6th National School Moot Court competition in terms of the year under review. It would be interesting also for the committee to know that for this year, Deputy Minister, my recollection is that the Eastern Cape took the number one position. Unfortunately, the MEC could not celebrate that positive development together with that. Can supporting schools, these are some of the activities, very important activities, health promotions, and we provided figures there, but also in terms of comprehensive sexuality education there, a lot of activities that have taken place, we've even provided the stats and throughout the summary of that program. I'll then quickly move over to the financials. In terms of the financials, the allocated appropriated 22.9 billion. We've managed to spend 22.9 billion. A slight variance of about 61.6 million. Which takes us to 99.7%, which is one of our highest performance in 3 years. And we're just indicating there that some of where we're unable to spend, because in program one, you understand my zero problem to 35.2 million, and it's accounted for by the investigation that we carried out in Karikudi. The honorable members will recall that we detected fraudulent activities in Karikudi, and we stopped the payment of the volunteers, and out of that exercise we were able to secure savings, and that's what is accounted for. The second thing is the second chance program. The phase 2-3 activities saw a reduced number of learners there who benefited from the program, and that led to the saving as well. Program 3, underspent by 6.8%, we view the variances not really material. Program 4, underspent by 16.6%, but also in terms of treasury standards, the variance is not deemed to be material. Program 5 as well, 4.4 million, and the variance in terms of treasury standards are also not viewed as being material. Well, we performed as expected. Underperformance is viewed as over underperformance should be more than 2%. The only area where we recorded more than 2% is goods and services, and it relates, of course, to mainly Karikudi and the second chance program that I referred to earlier on. But overall, healthy spending through economic classification there, as you can see. Just to do a comparison, as I said before, that our performance this year is the highest in 3 years. In terms of expenditure, we're higher than 2015, 16, 17, 99.7, almost 100%. And of course, earmarked funds, we even went over 5.1% there. We slightly went over 5.1%. And of course, the deviation is explained, and I've provided the explanation for the deviation, but also the investigation that I referred to earlier on. Well, in terms of goods and services again, national assessment, appropriate design for national assessment, the systemic evaluation that I referred to as well, some savings were made there because as part of the 5 years that money could have been used as part of the administration of funds. Well, in terms of learners with profound intellectual disabilities, conditional grants, the story remains the same, honorable members. The major issue was around the appointment of multidisciplinary teams of psychologists, the therapies, where it was difficult to attract suitably qualified specialists. And it took a while before Treasury could agree with us that going forward we could deal with this matter differently and advise provinces to have a relook at the organizational structure and create permanent posts in the organizational structure. That's mainly the reason that accounts for underperformance, because even the expenditure, non-personnel expenditure, had to be incurred through activities of the multidisciplinary team. Payment of capital assets there, well, essentially the over expenditure on buildings and other structures in respect of our city project was due to activities were underway and budget cuts, of course, didn't take that into account. We still had to pay for activities that we had carried out, although the budget was reduced. Honorable members will recall that over the MTEF we lost about 7 billion in infrastructure, and that had a severe impact on our city. And of course, Treasury could say that in the past we are unable to spend the money that's allocated, but we've now demonstrated our ability to spend. We've even gone beyond what was allocated for the program as the deputy minister correctly pointed out. And these figures attest to that. We went over by 1.8%, as you can see, in a CD, exceeding the money that was allocated. And the reason is simple. Projects that were not carried out prior yet are continuing. We still have the responsibility to even execute programs of the current financial year. So they are uploaded into the subsequent financial year. And therefore, it creates the ongoing financial crisis. I see that we are competing with the workers out there. Maybe they are saying about time that we are out of this. Well, again, we're just indicating, well, the expenditure of education infrastructure grant, nice performance there, as you can see, went slightly over, but of course we're reflecting on countries, either underperformance or overperformance. You can see that the Free State was a bit overheating, with Mpumalanga underperforming, and therefore provinces that are underperforming assisting those that are underperforming. National School Nutrition Program, a slight underperformance there. And as you can see, the main culprit being Limpopo there, which underperformed by more than 2% as compared to the other provinces. But overall, the program is almost 100%, 99%. HIV and AIDS, a slight underperformance. We should have done much better than the performance indicated there. We even underperformed compared to the previous two financial years. And of course, the culprits are indicated there. It's in case five, Free State overheating, Gauteng overheating, KwaZulu-Natal overheating, Limpopo grossly underperforming at 65%. Northwest underperforming, maybe that's why we are there, through Section 101B. And Western Cape, maybe we'll get ready to move over to Western Cape with Section 120 because it underperforms as well. And then Med Science and Technology, a bit of a disappointment there. We are unable to maintain, to lock in our gains of the previous year. We performed nicely the previous year, and we dropped in 2017-2018, drastically for that matter, Chair. And here are the culprits. Eastern Cape leading the pack, followed by Free State, and Gauteng, surprisingly, also joining there. KZN also, Limpopo, the usual culprit, at 82%. And Northwest, again, confirming the reason why we are there, through Section 120. Well, we also want to report to the committee that we have been qualified on six assets on our CD, in particular owing to inability to fully account, properly account for assets, leading to accruals that are very difficult to confirm. And the rest of it, I think, has also been explained in the recommendations of the BRRR report, although it comes from 2016-2017. But it's been problems in our city. And as indicated in the BRRR report, our weaknesses are around getting the built industry specialists. And ACD has been carried out on an ad hoc basis in the department. And we are happy to announce to the committee that we have now taken a long-term and permanent view in providing the requisite expertise to infrastructure. By some divine intervention, Treasury allowed us through identifying money from somewhere, to appoint a DDG will oversee infrastructure and also appoint a chief quantity surveyor and a chief engineer. And I'm happy to indicate, Chair, that last week Friday we interviewed for a post of a quantity surveyor. We've got two specialists that we are recommending for appointment to the minister. And unfortunately, we couldn't get people who are suitably qualified for chief engineer. And therefore, we have to re-advertise. For the post of the DDG, I've been working with the ministry so that the minister and the deputy minister are available, because in terms of the directive of cabinet, DDG upwards, those are cabinet approvals and appointments, and they have to interviews and shortlisting have to be led by the minister and the deputy minister. So in due course, we'll be filling that post. We are of the view that we've been battling over the last few years, trying to almost draw water out of a rock. Now we need to strengthen that unit by bringing in the requisite expertise. We are well on course to do that. We'll be re-advertising for the chief engineer, and I can assure you that our intention is that before the end of this year, we should at least have two out of three of those posts filled, so that we come and deal with this challenge around infrastructure. Well, irregular expenditure, I'm happy to indicate that we have reduced irregular expenditure by 75%. And I'm sure the AG can attest to that. And the reason being that we've exercised stringent fiscal prudence to say that if you don't follow the PFMA, we don't carry out that activity. The 154 million that's indicated there, it comes from multi-year projects. But you'll see that if you look at the last 2 years, we don't have new activities that are coming in. That's why the regular expenditure has been reduced by 75%. And I'm sure it's a combination of hard work and, again, divine intervention. Well, I'm providing details in terms of what I've just indicated there, the opening balance, restated amount, as you can see, what I've just said, irregular expenditure leading to prior years, as you can indicate, the numbers are showing there, irregular expenditure leading to the current year, and of course current must be read in conjunction with multi-year projects, as I indicated earlier on. And of course, as you can see, reducing the figures quite substantially. And in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and again, we've exercised fiscal prudence, almost reducing that to zero. And the 495,000 that is there is coming from legal fees of engaging a legal firm on a matter that's related to awarding the tender to work groups where we needed to get an instructing attorney, instructing senior counsel representing us. Our view is that that amount could be later on reallocated under regular expenditure rather than fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because it does not classically meet the definition of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because an activity, a legitimate activity, was carried out. But Treasury was of the view that at that time we classified it as fruitless and wasteful. But we are saying the activity has been carried out, and in fact the court ruled in our favor for that matter, in that matter where the instructing attorney was involved. And therefore it should not be classified as fruitless and wasteful activity or expenditure. Now, in terms of the performance information, program 2 is unqualified, 3 is unqualified, program 4 is qualified, owing to two areas that I referred to. One is lorries, the other one is the number of district directors who have gone through assessment as I've indicated under that program. So we got qualified mainly because of that. And well, it brings me to the end of this presentation, Chair. I hope I've tried to create enough time for discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I can see maybe your language teacher is even your learners how to summarize. You managed to do that. Thank you very much for that presentation, giving us a clearer picture of how the department has performed in the past financial year. There's so much detail that you have said, but let me commend the department for the achievements that we have gained, that you have shown today. There is a lot we are going to be talking about. But also, DG, I could even feel when we were getting to program four, starting to talk about Assisi. You drew in that oxygen to get energy for that. It's just a thorn on your flesh, you can see. But I think as we discuss moving on and on what we have said, we find ways and means to say how are we going to be dealing with that program for when it comes to Assisi, because really it paints you even badly. Looking at almost all the targets and all the programs where we have performed very well, but when it comes to that program, really, we can all feel that it's a huge task for you and the department, but I hope as we continue to engage, we are going to get into that. Let me open up for discussions. I'll make my comments towards the end. Honorable Fortes, I can see today, you want to be the first one in this class. So fine, let me start with you, Honorable Bodden, Honorable Machenzi, Honorable Basson, Honorable Bosho, Honorable Ngoto, in that order, you can start, Honorable Bodden.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I did forward my apology that I will have to leave immediately after. I pass Honorable Marches here. Which soccer team is she supporting? And she confirms she supports Kaizer Chiefs. It could be, I think, their back-to-back defeats. So hopefully the attire will encourage Kaizer Chiefs to perform better.
She's not alone there, he's with the DG and the DM.
Okay, thanks very much, Chairperson, and let's welcome also the report. In fact, this report follows from the report we received yesterday from the Auditor General. But I think from my side, look, there's a general appreciation that there is a fortified leadership here that understands their mandate. Of course, Chair, what we need to do is probably on, there's a particular slide that says, in terms of the NDP program and plan, by 2030 we are supposed to have 450,000 bachelor's degrees passes, and I think the Director General broke it down to 300,000 in 2024. Now, in the slides and the slides of yesterday, they have indicated that we have not been able to necessarily upscale the number of full-time, and my emphasis is on full-time, because I know there's a part-time equation. We have not necessarily been able to upscale full-time capability in terms of learners actually that sits for the national senior examination. And that worries me a bit, because one of the issues that we need to look at broadly, Chair, as a portfolio committee, is how do we cauterize the bleeding of learner numbers out of the system? How do we prevent further bleeding of those that enters primary education and disappears within a cohort quite dramatically? And I think the figures is there. And maybe it's a rhetorical question, because it means that we need to formalize your early childhood development education streams. But I think there must be some sort of a strategy where we say, look, the qualitative arm of basic education at secondary level, we have been able to stabilize it over probably the last 5 years. So the performance has been consistent of Department of Basic Education. We need to obviously now do something differently and better at the lower grades to upscale your completion rate for grade 12. So I think that is one of the comments. The second issue is something that all of us would be seized with. We have what we call this education grant, all right, for development, construction of schools, etc. In particular, construction of new schools. But I think there's a deficit in terms of funds that follow that function. Because not necessarily, Chair, that I have been able to pick up where there is funds allocated for infrastructure. For example, if, say, 60 million is allocated to construct a new school in Sebokeng, that there is also an amount in addition allocated to operationalize the school, pay more educators, etc. I think it's an issue that we need to engage on. And like I've said, I've not picked it up, and I think it's a dilemma. If it's not a dilemma, let's be clarified there. Does this function of new schools, does it follow new money in terms of staff complement, etc.? And I think, for me, that is an important issue. And then the question is related to your PSPs. Now, this, and I'm happy internal audit is here. Your PSPs is your professional what service provider. Now, Director General, when you ask what is a professional service provider in infrastructure, it presupposes it's actually some sort of engineering company. I get it. It's a qualified, serious professional enterprise with a defined mandate to provide services necessarily that you are not able to contract through the normal supply chain processes. However, where we get confronted with the situations where your mandate of PSPs in various provinces has been expanded to include soft services. Soft services is those services necessarily that does not fall within the core of the mandate of being a PSP. For example, no PSP, Honorable Chairperson, no PSP should procure services of stationery in any education department, isn't it so? No PSP should do it, Director General. And I'm saying to you here that from a definitive level, that if there is soft services outside of your professional services that are being procured, and we have our sister departments in provinces that are abusing the professional service providers for other irrelevant issues. And I think it's important that when our internal audit, in particular, does your sampling, that they should actually look at your PSP and what type of services it has been able to procure, because the issues of after the fact investigation is not going to help, but I think we need to prevent it. I think that is the role of internal audit. So it's probably just part of my advice. And I've seen on page 61 that the department says poor performing contractors, we are either putting them on terms or terminating them. Once again, from a point of view as a member of portfolio committee, seriousness can only be displayed by department basic education when people are blacklisted. And remember, there's a directive that where companies have defaulted, we are supposed to blacklist them on the National Treasury database. Mm-hmm. Because all companies, they conform to your CSD registration. And I'm raising it with the DG, Honorable Chairperson, because, you know, when I work in social development, we had the same dilemma that your sexual register is not updated. So you have these perpetrators against children, and they never, we all the time raise it, and we all the time say it's when people don't perform, let's blacklist them. And my appeal really is that moving forward from this annual report, DG, is we must make examples. We must make examples of those that does not take, you know, the authority of government actually serious. And then, Honorable Chairperson, look, this follows from the AG's report and the Financial and Fiscal Commission presentation. DG, where it says that the spend is very good, and we must agree on that, on infrastructure generally, apart from those two provinces. But we receive a presentation that says, for example, in Eastern Cape, it's 100% spent on the infrastructure grant, with only 29% deliverables. Now it's a dichotomy. It's not good work. And people must not tell me around the table it's because of transport economics, that it's fast, etc. When it was budgeted for, it had all those variables in place. Now, I think, Chair, that in particular that specific issue about Eastern Cape, about 100% money spent, 29% of infrastructure delivered, that requires us probably to have an eagle's eye, so that we can able to track, is this a typical example of a rotten potato, or what is the specific issue? The second last two issues, Honorable Chairperson, is I'm happy, DG, that you raised that there's a dialogue with deans of higher education. And remember yesterday we asked Amalusi about the certification and the quality assurance of our matric examination. And I'm raising it in the context that when our children graduate from matric, there is still further examinations that they are being subjected to in terms of quality reassurance from the higher education sector. And I hope all of us, Chair, we know about it. The kids write the special examen, what, assessment? Yes, to say that, look, this one is really, or she really, a product of a qualitative system. Now, I think it's important that we need to probably understand this, but I think your engagements with deans goes a long way, Chair, around those issues. The last issue is just about the triplets of what I call financial impropriety, of which the most serious one, and I've not seen that you have reported it, which means it's a good thing, it's about unauthorized expenditure. I would assume there's no unauthorized expenditure because it has not been recorded. That is good. Because you know, Honorable Chairperson, unauthorized expenditure says the department acted outside of what has been voted for by through legislation. What concerns me is the emphasis of the internal audit where it makes a recommendation that irregular expenses, one of the remedial actions is to institute disciplinary actions. Now, Chair, for me, I would have thought a more serious transgression is your wasteful. It's your wasteful expenditure. Your wasteful in terms of the ranking of those triplets of financial impropriety, it's a more serious ranking in PFMA. And probably I would want to say, I would want to agree that, look, I think it's time that we need to institute your corrective remedial actions against those that engage in basic wasteful expenditure. Because for me, that is the wasteful and your fruitless is what we must be fascinated about. Your irregular, you must be commended. Look, irregular, it's ranked on the complete bottom. Irregular means that, look, there's been a crisis where you have engaged in a certain act, for example, 500,000, three quotations, because of urgency, etc., and there has not been necessarily three quotations from registered CSD suppliers because of peculiar situations. So we must commend that it has been brought down. We have raised it also yesterday with the AG. We have almost 70-75% we have brought irregular down. That's quite significant for such a huge department. But I would want to recommend, Chair, formally that let's look at closely at what type of disciplinary inquiries we can institute against those responsible for your fruitless and wasteful. Because that for me is quite significant and serious. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Cortes. Honourable Machoso.
Thank you, Chair, and the opportunity. Thank you, PTG, and good morning, everyone. I'm sorry that I was a little bit late. I just got caught somewhere else. But anyway, thank you, PTG, for the presentation. Just to go back to what Mr. Bochert has just said, the system bleeds about 1 million learners year after year. I think we're trying to figure out what is the figure, but that's the figure that we of the learners that end up that are lost within the system year after year. For me, I was a little bit disappointed with the fact that we received a qualified audit. And specifically, it's an issue that we've been talking about. I remember my colleague Ian talking about, how the registration of documenting of all the projects of ACD. And he came up with a project management type of system that can be used to be able to do that. And unfortunately, like we find ourselves today in a situation whereby we receive a qualified audit based on the fact that we haven't been able, the department hasn't been able to really document all the projects and be able to give clarity on what we have what the department has achieved from the ACD project. And also the issue of irregular expenditure that we are seeing also is very much worrying about the 1.7 billion that we're seeing. I think on top of the fact that the targets that we have in mind as well, I don't know if I missed your explanation on what the AG was talking about yesterday, the fact that we haven't achieved none of the targets that were set by ICT. And if you could be able to maybe to explain, because that's what they're saying, that according to them, the four targets that you set for yourself, you achieved zero. So maybe if you can maybe just explain to us what is the reason for me. I know maybe some members already have the reason. When we go to the NSNP, I think my colleague here is going to talk about it. But, you know, normally we have seen 100% achievement on it. I know now, you know, we're around about 90%. We are spoiled with 100% achievement, 99% and all that. But to me, it means like that there are days that some learners are not fail. That's okay, no, I mean, you can be able to come back to me and give me a reason for that. Why we didn't achieve 100%. I know Honorable Sonia is going to go back to that. I think she might have a couple of questions on that. The other issue is the textbooks. I know I'm saying this over and over again, that we're not worth the end of the problem of that. Just, I'm very interested to know the procurement of Northwest. If the issue of having it central, the central procurement, because I know there's the saying that you know the economy of scales is the reason why there's a central procurement. But we all know that if a supplier they hear that there's a government involved in any procurement, they escalate the fees. Everything becomes exorbitant that we, you know, eventually we are unable to afford. So I would like to compare with the provinces that literally buy from the supplier directly, or those who do central procurement. What is the difference? I mean, do we really see a difference in terms of what works and what doesn't work? And if the Northwest, they are doing central procurement and it's not working, why are we continuing with that? Because for me, it worries me that, you know, we are now faced with examination, and there are learners who didn't receive their stationery, the textbooks, they haven't received them. So, but then they're expected to be able to achieve, and they will be sending, you know, getting on the 2,000 and going like, how did we perform? But knowing very well that they didn't have the basic resources that they required, including the desk, the furniture. In the Northwest, predominantly it was just about that, those two. They didn't have the furniture. And there's the issue of the teachers as well. The teachers that were not trained. We've gone from a target of 20,000 and only 10 teachers were actually not receiving any training. I think they, what's the call? Just to get some of that diagnosis. Yeah. And I just want to find out what is this perception that you are talking about, like that you have changed their perception. Like what they actually are referring to in terms of that. Okay, and I think that's about it for me. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Allow me also to say thank you to DG. It was wonderful to listen to the presentation. DG, you know that improvements can be there, progress can be there, but it's a consuming in a park. The mere fact that in your programs, programs 2, 3, 4, 5, you have indicators, targets that are not fully achieved. That means you give us something to ask or to say. I asked yesterday when we got the report from AG that this curriculum issue, what is its time frame to close it, to let it rest in peace? Because it's always giving us that negative report. When are we going to close it? Because I heard about 0.5% that is still outstanding. Do you think we are going to able to get that 0.5 or 0.5 for that is still outstanding? Honorable Mokoto yesterday asked that. Can we say we can make a peace with living with irregular, wasteful, fruitless, and whatever expenditure? Is there any point that we can say? I understand, D.T., you said we have reduced that area with 75%. Do you think is there any point of time that we will ever reach also a clean audit that we say Department of Education has received a clean audit? In program three, you mentioned that the indicators that are shown there in amber or red is under the diagnostic test in certain subjects like EFL and physical education, accounting is through the teachers not participating. What measures or what steps have we taken against those teachers that are not participating in the program that is there to empower them? What have we done on that? DM, okay, said, okay, there's a remarkable progress on ACD, which is just contradictory to what AG said yesterday. AG put an emphasis on ACD as its performance is very poor. They mentioned a lot there where they even say there's a mismatch of spending and service delivery. They mentioned that there's a lack of effective systems for monitoring and controlling service providers. They mentioned that there's an inadequate management capacity. Thus, this program is performing so poor. I'm glad that you mentioned that you have now appointed directors or one who will be. I thought that Mr. Mafuku is for us all the time. Now, infrastructure. So now you have added somebody on top of him. Maybe day when you are not here, you will get a positive result on activity. Lurid is part of ICT. Lurid is part of IT, which has been mentioned by AG, that this area is totally neglected. In this sense, even in the district level, the capacity is not there to monitor, to assist That's my question, even on school and exam readiness. I asked, since the district are having maybe one person per lot, one official to monitor or to assist the whole district, is there any plan that the department is having to capacitate the district? Because I always say the service delivery lies in the district level. Doesn't help to have a province with all those managers and all those directors. Then the district is having those junior administrators that are not even well capacitated. They are just taken because they have grade 12 or they did kept at school and so on. Do we look on quality that we appoint at the district level to be able to assist? DG, when he was mentioning the digitalization, he said even educators should be also be taken on par on. And my problem was that DG spoke about end of this financial year, we should be able to implement this. Having this a huge backlog in the province, in the regions, districts, having this huge backlog in the districts, I don't speak about the schools, they don't even have those people. Are we going to be able to reach the goal that has been set by the target that has been set by the DG? Yes, Karikude, you have recovered money and progress has been made. Well done. But there are these irregularities that happen in the department, within the department. One day you must name and shame them so that we all know who are the cause of this. And I don't hear the report saying that these people, because it comes a long way, it's not the first time, it comes a long way that this supply chain is doing these irregularities. How many of them have been criminally charged for this since, let me say, 2014, as I record my record? And how much has the department recovered from those wasteful and fruitless adventures? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Posh. Honorable Posh.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the presentation, DG. The DM opened his remarks with the fourth industrial revolution, and his concern is with connectivity. Mm-hmm. Could we please be given a report on how many of our schools, the 15,000 schools that have access to broadband, how many are in the rural areas, mm-hmm. and how many other schools that have not been identified will be identified? Because it is the route that every single country takes right now, and the fact that there are also not enough trained educators is a grave concern. The DM rightly said that learners navigate much, much quicker because they've brought up with the technology, and we need to ensure that our teachers are on par. And I need to know, or the committee needs to know, where we stand with the training of our teachers. And then going through the report, the minister rightly says that effective learning can only take place in a safe environment. And recently we've seen a spike with regard to violence. Teachers on teachers, learners on teachers on learners, etc., etc. And we know that with social cohesion and the joining of hands, we can improve this on this issue. But we need to see how the Department of Basic Education has reached out to our stakeholders to address this issue. Because if we do not address it, we're going to see more and more violence taking place at school. So we need to see the social cohesion. On page 83 of the report, you say that you've met with the registrar of the Child Protection Register to discuss ways to ensure the names of educators who commit unwanted acts against children are listed in the register. Could you explain to me what these unwanted acts are? Because it doesn't say anything to me. Would this suggest that the DBE thinks that some form of consensual relationships between a teacher and a learner is acceptable? I'd also like to be informed what problems were identified with getting the names of these perpetrators or educators onto the registrar, and whether you've attached a timeline to correcting these issues. Then on page 125, you speak of the 47 schools that were monitored with regard to the implementation of the NSSF. The question is, how many schools still have not implemented this framework? Because last year, when the question was asked, you indicated that 40.5% of the approximately 25,000 public schools had not yet been trained. Has this figure changed? And then with regard to the NSSF, has the department gone through it again to see if there could be gaps in the framework so that we can address the challenges that could still be facing us? My colleague spoke, and everybody spoke about the diagnostic test, so I'll leave that, but I'd like to know, the low teacher training attendance is of concern. And what measures has the department put in place to monitor this? Is there a consequence management process in place? Because we cannot allow teachers to get away by not capacitating themselves. It's a clear indication if we look at the fourth industrial revolution. And then just speaking to the reading glasses that the minister spoke of, which is also a problem, we must take it further than just the reading glasses. We must take it to the LTSM, because many schools are not given enough LTSM. Doing oversight, you come into our grade classes, our foundation classes. The teacher sits with a book, but the learner has no book in front of him or her. They cannot identify with a word. We need to ensure that every single learner is provided with that book. The AG yesterday also spoke of schools having to make copies for the learners because of insufficient textbooks. And then, I forget the page, but you spoke about the repetition figures amongst the male learners being high. What are we going to do to curb these figures? You've seen a significant progress with regards to the NSC. Well done. What, to me, is, however, of concern with these extraordinary pass rates is that our first-year students at varsity either drop out or they just don't complete the degree that they're studying for. Could it be, I'm asking a question, that because of the low pass rate on our school level, matric level, could this be a contributing factor? Chair, we had sufficient time to go through this report, and I want to thank you for that, because normally we only have about 4 or 5 days. The Director General, the DG, spoke about a visit to Turkey, and that you've entered into an agreement to focus inter alia on the curriculum. What, however, is of concern to me is that Turkey from 2019 is taking away evolution from their curriculum. To me, this is a huge concern, because evolution is something that is based on facts, and scientists build themselves on evolution. So I just hope that we're not going to remove it from our curriculum, because scientific knowledge is crucial, because it could lead to our detriment. The National Curriculum Framework has been versioned into 10 official languages in Braille, but I see no mention of large print books. If we could just be given feedback on that. On page 73 of the report, you say there's a lack of capacity in the country to print Braille material. This is of concern. Have you brought something about to address the issue? Is there an agreement with Pioneer Printers, or can we enter into an agreement with them? Some time ago, you spoke about bringing about a government printer for all the printing. How far are we with them, or has that also just died a silent death? And then the training of the 31 deaf teaching assistants. Thank you. It's a step in the right direction. But I would like to urge the department to provide longer training sessions, because a week or 2 weeks, a month, 10 days here, 5 days here, does not capacitate our teaching assistants and our SASL teachers properly. And then I'd just like to know, but we can ask Faith, they're sitting there, have they developed any such programs as their CPDT programs? Second chance matric, I've spoken about this variously on numerous occasions. When will it be offered to our learners with disabilities? And then I forget the page, but I see the department only collaborated with SATU to train teachers in multi-grade teaching and the multi-grade toolkit. Why only SATU when there are many other unions that could also have been asked to assist? You have 15,000 plus young educators that have entered the profession. Where have these educators been deployed, and what are their fields of expertise? Page 128, the NSMP, very good. I'm very happy about that. But the non-delivery and in KZN, what is the situation? Were the disputes that they had with the supplier, has it been resolved? And then I'll take this to face the cases. What I would like to know is, Randfontein Secondary School in Toekomsvis, bricks were plastered onto the asbestos structure. And only after photos were given to the Gauteng minister did they actually agree that they are at fault. What I would like to know is, who authorized the building or the repairment or whatever it could be of this school, and has anyone been held to account? I can show you the photos. Because if it's been done once, it could be done twice or three times. We all know what asbestos buildings look like and the danger attached to it. And then the money with regard to the Ratunku Primary School in the Masori village in Limpopo. It was signed into commission 8 years ago, 2010. There's nothing. Absolutely nothing. What's happened to that school and what's happened to the budget? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bosha. Honourable Bosha.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that the members may have covered a lot of time, so I'll just raise a few issues that I think that they have not captured. But before that, I must also appreciate the presentation and the depth of the report. I think it has been a few financial years, Chairperson, since we started as members of Parliament of this committee, members of this committee, that we were raising a lot of issues with regard to issues of audit and internal control. And maybe, Chair, I think it's proper to say we thank the department for having responded to that call by the committee that they must start, you know, shaping up in that area, because it was a killer for the department. In actual fact, we appreciate the fact that there is progress, you know, that it might not have had all at once, but gradually we see that type of improvement. And even the fact that they have been able to make savings in certain instances, and they were also able to ensure that there is proper expenditure there is accountability in terms of where the funds were going to and so forth. We really appreciate that GG and the TV appreciate that movement. But I want to raise a specific question on that particular matter. I don't know, like, if you look at this, the action plan, it does not give you timeline. And I think that going forward, we need those timelines because there are so many things that are loaded. Even when you go through the program, the programs are overloaded with a lot of activities. And if we don't, you know, package our work properly and put the targets properly, you know, and the timeline properly, we are going to have a problem that we already have now, like the issue of over-targeting has been raised as a point. And, you know, we commit one mistake today, but we have to sit with it for years until we can correct that mistake. So I think it must be a lesson and maybe something that should be considered. I think not maybe, it must be something that is considered, that we put the timeline so that we are able to scratch it off. And I think, Chairperson, maybe as the portfolio committee, we can agree that as much as we've been working with you all these years, we will work with you again to correct the mistakes that are there, and then to deal with the challenges that are there. My colleagues have raised the issues of accountability. We see that there is movement on that area, but DG, I just want to check those directors, the chief directors that are, you know, affected by this, what action have you taken against them? It might not be criminal action, but have they been reprimanded? Have they received their bonuses? Because you have got bonuses, the 13th check. And why did they receive that 13th check? Because there must be something that is there, that is, you know, that prohibits a particular misdemeanor. So I think that we must start taking proper action to make sure that those people that have led to this, they are properly disciplined. I want to agree with my colleagues on that point. And then the other thing that I have noticed is the issue of the instrumenting agent. It has always been an issue for the previous years, particularly in the previous financial year and even now, that we have received reports that there are challenges with regard to the underperformance with regard to some of the implementing agents. And like, what is the department doing with that problem? Because they have identified it as a challenge. And even yesterday when we got a report from the FFC, even the AG, they talked about that hurdle that is keeping the department from, you know, being the performing according to the right, you know, expectation. So I just want to ask a question, because FFC said that there's a need for the department to streamline accountability. And from face value, if you look at it, you know, like, if you have somebody in the middle, like even consultants, wherever you go, consultants in municipalities, when you give a consultant will do the work and then leave everything, and then when the work fails, the consultant is nowhere to be found. So I don't know whether the, like, the department is willing to acknowledge that there is a need for us to do away with the implementing agent. Rather, we deal with the contractors directly so that we are able to have, you know, a hold on them instead of the having to go through the middleman just to even out the inefficiency that is there. So I just wanted to raise that question. The other point that I have noted in the report relates to the 3,558 schools which do not offer African languages. And I think this is a critical point that myself as a member of this committee coming from the ANC, I have put a specific interest on this point. I just wanted to know what is the reason why we don't have why do we have this situation at the moment? Why do we have such schools? Because last I thought that it was only because of shortage of teachers, and then what intervention is in place to deal with it. And then the other point relates to capacity, lack of capacity or capacity constraints and poor monitoring. It also emerges as a common feature. Whether you listen to the department acknowledges that FFC spoke about it and the AG spoke about it. I want to check what is in the pipeline as an intervention to deal with this and the matter of lack of capacity and monitoring, which also drags the department down. We understand that there are many areas where the department has really moved forward, but those little things, they have led to the department regressing from unqualified to qualified audits. And then maybe just to get a response on why some of the schools are still using an old version of LORES instead of the latest version. I think Chairperson, most of the issues were raised. Let me just stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ngozi. Do you want to add anything?
No, I forgot to ask me.
Okay.
Ask me?
I just want to find out if there are any of the implementing agents, if they have been blacklisted, and what is actually, what does it mean when they are blacklisted? Does it mean that they won't be getting any contracts with the government, or just the department? And also, I know that the percentage of retention has been increased, but it was arrested, the visit was done recently, in terms of, you know, where once you are almost to completion of the school, you have increased it to 20%. But now I just want to find out how far back do we go on that, on 20%? Or is it going to be only implementable maybe next year, or is it possible that we can actually be able to? What are the retention fee, or the percentage? I think it was the percentage fee. Yeah. And also, those, I think it was asked, those who have transgressed in terms of irregular exchange, what steps have you taken? Exactly what steps were taken to ensure that this doesn't happen again? Was anyone accountable, or was anyone fired?
Okay, thank you very much. Can I also add? Let me start with this one on the progress report, how you respond to. On page 5. Page 5, I'm not sure.
The presentation?
Not the presentation, the one there, the program. What is it? How do you start it? Yeah, the action plan on auditor's recommendations from the previous year. Page 5 of that document. You talk of the renewed MOAs with the IAs that you are working with. And I would love you to talk to those MOAs. What do they entail, if ever you have them up until 2021? The reason why I'm asking that, even from the questions that the honorable members have raised, it shows that there is a problem with these implementing agents. And now if you have those MOAs, of which I don't know what is it that is there in those MOAs, is it not something that is compelling you not to be in a position even to change them just because you have signed those? What is it, you know, if we can know exactly what to say, what is entailed in that, in those honorees that you have signed? Because if something compelling you to be with them up until 2021, then it means whatever. No, let me not get there up until you respond to this, because now I'm confused with it's what I'm thinking, of which I don't even know what is entailed in those documents. DM, on the digitalization of the books, it's good, we commend the department, but my worry and my fear is, you get into the schools, we go there on our oversight, you find that they are not even aware that they have such treasure with them, you know. How to make sure, how to cascade, how to teach us. For an example, we went to one school in the Northwest where she was complaining even on the issues of these books that Honorable Machete will remind me, because you always talk about it. These technical books, yes, exactly. Only to find that even in the response from the department, you get into the website, the information is there, but the teacher will tell you that I did not even know, you know. So we do have such good material, but how do we make sure that the recipients know exactly, and those people who are supposed to be working with, they know what is there for them, you know. Because we can end up seated like this, I commend you, only to find that it does not reach where we need that information to reach.
same thing like the connectivity DM. Another problem of the connectivity, you find that how to make sure that once you say so many schools are connected, it remains like that, we add. Instead of, now you find that they are connected due to data, what, they end up, you end up having the numbers, but when you come to the schools themselves, there's nothing, they only have gadgets and they're not utilizing them, you know. I think it talks to the issues of broadband and so forth, and the issues of data support. So I'm not sure how do we maintain and build on the 65% that you talked about, so that we don't find mixing the information as we go out to visit the schools themselves. Or the issue of IOL has been mentioned, I wanted to talk to. On page 57, on your presentation, you talked of 98% of SASM coverage to the schools, but for me, it brings back the question of Western Cape not utilizing SASM. How do we match the two? And also, is there any means and ways where we will see one tool on instrument being used throughout the country? So, but that 98% for me, it brought a lot of questions to say, can you really rely on the 90%, 98% if ever there's something like that? Same thing with the PLC. All the provinces have done it, are engaged. Why? What is wrong with the Western Cape? Why are they excluded? So if you can talk to that, because such uniformity throughout the country really is one thing that we need to look at. On social cohesion, I think we have done very well with what we have targeted up until now. But you did talk with DG and DM as to say much needs to be done when we see these reports, things that are happening in our schools. It means, for me, it says if we can afford and we can manage to do so much on the programs that we have already been done. So just build up on that one. It's one area really that we need to focus on, the issues of social cohesion, soft as they might be, but they are denting the image of the department. If ever now and again we are going to see the behavior, the manner that our learners are behaving and bringing up the communities and so forth, but really I feel there's something drastic that you need to do when it comes to that. The training of teachers, the developmental part of teachers is one of the imperatives of the MDP, and it's one thing where we are saying we cannot afford to see teachers not engaging on the developmental program. Well, in as much as I understand SPAs, the targets that you are talking about that were not achieved is not the only way of, or the only programs that our educators are exposed to. But I hope DG, as we are still going to be explaining even on what is it that the teachers are not agreeing upon on the ownership of the tool, we have found the way of moving forward, and in future we are not going to see what we have seen here, because it's one area where we need to invest on our teachers to make sure that they are developed in whatever way. Again, DG, the MTSF is targeting 34% of bachelors when it comes to our matric results, and we need to congratulate you again. The improvement that we keep on seeing, but do we envisage where we are going to be reaching the targets that we have anytime soon? Because as of now, we're standing at 23.57, improved from 22.61 of each grade. It is an improvement, but moving forward, what is it that we can do when it comes to that? Ages office, talk to us about the issue of curriculum coverage yesterday, of which, yes, I want to quote them well. They didn't say there's no monitoring or there's no curriculum coverage. They say in some schools that they have done, you know.
And in some?
In some,
yes, exactly, in some. But that some, that summary that they have given, it painted a bad picture as to say, department, you are not taking care of, when you talk to curriculum, that is your core function that you do. So if ever you are going to be getting such a comment from the AG's office, really everyone in the committee yesterday, everyone who was here, we were very much concerned as to say, what is it that is happening? I would love you, DG, to talk to that, and then every the AG's office is here so that we can talk about these issues and move forward. Even on the issue of the classification of the wasteful and fruitless expenditure, the one that you have said of using that, because even the AG's office said it's about that legal firm that was used. So as to say, how was it classified? So it's one thing where we're saying we'll always wish to see that good working relationship between these two offices, so that whatever report that we get from the AG and also the department, we know that we're working on the challenges that we are faced with together, then we move forward. Because I even raised with them even yesterday the issue of the schools where they were saying there are schools that are not being utilized. They're completed schools, but that. Fortunately, I did ask the AG's office even here. I did ask for the list. The first school that was on the list was Lizimani. That is in my province, in my region. I said, no. This cannot be. This school, as the portfolio committee, we have been there in that school. It's quite a big school in the deep rural areas of KwaZulu-Natal. It's one of the best performing schools. So it was alarming to say, if it said that school is one school that in the report it is said is the school that has been built and is not utilized. So I want us today to say together, so that the report that we get from whoever of whatever office that we get, it enhances our work as in Parliament. We work together, but we know that we are factual when we deal with that. So maybe it's just an opportunity for us to work on such things, so that moving forward, really, we can take those reports, look at them both, and we say they enhance us, they give us the information as the members of the portfolio committee, so that we are not still running outside and talking on the things that when we open our mouths, people will be saying, but these are our public reps. Where do they say, you know? It's just one but example, but just one but example that I'm coming up with, just to say, I would really love to see that coordination between your report, and I strongly believe that before the AG comes with the report, before your department comes, you sit together, you agree on such things. I wish to see that thing continuing, because we have been seeing that happening. It's for the first time, really, where we find contradicting messages the way we did this year, of which I believe is something that we won't see in future. You will sit down, you will correct, you look at your report, so that when you come with your reports here, it's something that we can take forward and move on. Not to sit down again, not to give us more burden as the members of the portfolio committee now, to sit and scrutinize the whether, well, how is the level of the truth and this thing. So it's just a plea from my side, just to say, let us try and correct this thing moving on. Let us hope this was the first time it happened and will never happen. Thank you very much. Can I hand over back to you, GM or DG, to lead on the report?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and esteemed colleagues. Like my minister says, I'll do the easier ones and hand over the more difficult ones to the DG or the DM, as the case might be. So, Chair, I think the questions are very, very interesting and very, very important. And if you don't mind, with your permission, if I could start with your responses as the chair left now, so I'm not going to do her responses.
Well, you must proceed the same way.
I mean, she might want to hear what her thinking is around issues that she has raised. So I'll deal with some other issues generally, and the specifics I'll leave to the DG to deal with. The issues of tender, and I'm glad the AG's office is here, and perhaps to thank the AG's office. I think we work very collaboratively, we work very, very well. Mm-hmm. But the task that the AG faces in relation to its audit is twofold. One, in terms of the financial fiscal rules that we have to abide by, and the other is in terms of monitoring our performance. In other words, have we achieved the performance in terms of the performance indicators and to assess our performance. And there is where generally the problem lies. Because unless you understand the context, you tend to become very mechanical about it. And I'll give you a few examples. Take the Eastern Cape, and it has been raised by a colleague. What do we do about the Eastern Cape? The reality in the Eastern Cape is the following. Firstly, that it has more mud schools and unpaid schools than any other province. Secondly, that it has hundreds of schools with a very, very low enrollment. In other words, the reality is, as we speak right now, more than 1,000 schools have to be rationalized or merged in the Eastern Cape. We also an assessment of the list provided by the institution through our oversight discovered that there were schools that were identified for as a city project, which indeed should have been merged rather than having two separate schools within almost immediate proximity of each other, so that you would be able to provide better quality. So decisions have to be taken firstly as to the mergers and the closures of schools. And you are well aware of the fact, and I'm sure the AGIS officers have become aware of the reality, that it's not a process that occurs on a basis of an arbitrary decision by the Department of Basic Education. The Western Cape has learned, and so has the Eastern Cape learned, that the court has directed that certain procedures have to be followed. Wide consultation, all stakeholders must be informed about it, and provision has to be made with regard to teachers that have to be transferred, transport has to be made available to learners in the particular schools. So it's a process. Why did the department do that? The department developed guidelines to assist not only Eastern Cape, but all provinces, the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, in order to ensure that when mergers take place or closures take place or rationalization occurs, it occurs in a way that is compliant with the framework indicated by the court. This in itself results in delays, which means that a decision to build cannot be effected immediately, because if you do build immediately, rather than basically creating an avenue for education, you have a redundancy over there, and that certainly is a challenge. To the extent that the department, the National Department of Basic Education, sent out a dedicated team to assist the Eastern Cape in its rationalization and merger procedure. And therefore you would find that particular financial year, the previous financial year and the year before that, you had a huge lift in terms of the execution of projects. And that was purely as a result of the mergers that had taken place, but also because of other reasons. And I speak about the other reasons is the issue of implementing agents. And again, here there is an interesting development. I would imagine that if at all the Department of Basic Education had folded its arms and did nothing about this particular reality, then you could say, you know, you certainly ought to be more proactive and exercise your oversight in a much more positive and meaningful way. The department engaged at a ministerial level, at a DG level, with the Department of Public Health to say where IDT is not performing. We cannot continue and persist with them making promises that they are going to deliver where it's in fact they're not delivering. We were able to persuade and through mutual agreement to take away projects for sanitation, for the building of new schools, from IDT, which falls under the ambit or within the purview of the Department of Public Works. In fact, minister, meetings were called with the minister, deputy minister of Public Works, at the offices of the DDC, where we decided to do that. What was the result of it? That's where the AG's offices, I think, should pay particular attention. Having taken that decision firstly, which is a good intervention, secondly, what was the outcome of that decision? The outcome of the decision is if you go to the Free State now, each one of those schools that was taken over is under construction. And these are not small projects, these are mega projects. So what the AG ought to do under those circumstances, say, having regard to the circumstance and the intervention that has been made, is there a legitimate basis or a satisfactory explanation as to this extension of time or the inability of the department to fulfill its targets. And I think at times those realities are lost. I don't think it's being done maliciously. I think it's really to say, this is what you're listening to. It becomes kind of mechanical compliance. We spoke about 36, 32 schools, there are only 26 schools. I'll give you another example. And I'm the agent officers is here, and I'm not saying it in any acrimonious or hostile way. The issues of practical completion. You gave one example of one school. But the issues of practical completion issues. And I don't blame the agent office. Practical completion in terms of their norms would mean when a certificate of completion is handed over to the entity that is responsible. Now the certificate of completion usually is rendered at the end of the day. You have a stragglers, usually a retention of 5% is held, and once the stragglers is completed, the quality surveyor, the engineer, the supervising architect is able to issue the certificate of completion. But the reality, whether you're in KwaZulu-Natal, in the Free State, in the Eastern Cape, schools are occupied for months and years after they have been completed. But the contractors who have indeed built those schools have not provided afterwards a certificate of completion. And the question then arises, why is it that that hasn't happened? The reason for it was that the retention amount was so small, 5%. In some instances, at best, 10%, but usually it was 5%. This ministry, Mr. Mofoko is here, the DG is here, demanded directives that you increase your retention fee to 20%, number one, so that those contractors could realize that unless it's complete, they're going to lose 20% of the amount that is due to them. The second direction that we gave is that where a contractor has not fulfilled its obligation in terms of issuing a completion certificate, that contractor should not be allowed to build any other school in any other part of the country. So that's a punitive measure. Now the effect thereof is that within a short space of time, suddenly you had completion certificates coming in fast and furious. Now, that was as a result of the intervention. And what we would like to argue and hope and appeal is that the agency officers must take note of this particular reality. And firstly, assess whether the intervention was a correct one. Secondly, whether it has yielded a positive result. And thirdly, what has the impact been of having done so, what has the impact of that particular reality been? So I argue, and I'm saying that, yes, indeed, there was... We did not achieve the target, but that is a reason. And I've given you another reality now, as you speak, that I can tell you without a shadow of doubt, on the basis of the information that is provided, and we interact with our directorate that is responsible for infrastructure, that we can exceed the target of 50 schools, provided we have the resources. Now, if we don't have the resources, how do you exceed the target? And that is the difficulty that you face. Now, there's a context in terms of financial constraints on the one hand, the ability to move forward a project, accelerate it in order to achieve, to overhaul the backlog. And those realities are realities that have to be taken into account. I would imagine that the solution would be not to place the blame on the office of the AG, but for the DG to be able to inform the AG's office. These are the realities that we confront with. This is how we propose to do it. We provide a written explanation as to any delays or any inability to achieve this task.
But please, the PM, before you even conclude, let's go back to a statement that you have just said, because it's opening up for the department. If you say, how can we achieve our targets without the resources? We have put the target on knowing very well what you have. You can't target. You can't target. Your target can't be for 50 million, knowing very well that you have got to 1 million. So that one, I really want you to go back to.
I can explain that.
Yeah.
Assuming you were to deliver 50 schools in 3 years financial year, and you only delivered 28 to 32, that means you were to deliver the remaining schools plus schools for this current financial year. Now, the money that you basically, that has been allocated for the 50 schools are not with you. They have been returned to treasury and deployed elsewhere. So now you have that backlog plus the current schools that you have to build, which means that technically you are exceeding your current target for 50 schools because you're also dealing with a backlog. But the Mofoka will tell you that as we speak right now, there are more than 60 schools that are under construction. Would I be correct? Okay. There are 100 schools under construction. Our target is 50. The possibilities are that from that 100, you could actually achieve 75% completion, provided you have the resources to pay the contractors for the 75%. And this is where the anomaly comes. And the department has not folded its arms and said, well, okay, we'll slow down the process and do nothing about it. The department is already engaging with treasury to say, we have accelerated our progress. We could indeed exceed our targets, or at the very least achieve our targets without any difficulty, provided we have resources that are made available. Like you saw, that we've already exceeded the 1 something billion that has appeared on the slide over there. And that reality is the reality that contractors are. I think that over the years, the AG's offices in the Department of Basic Education has worked extremely well. I would not take unkindly to any comments. And there are evidence that the council may be contacted a lot, but it's not an acrimonious relationship. And I do believe that they have to keep us on guard. We have to be vigilant. And grateful. I think that's the way government should work because they work in the public interest. They don't have any agenda to undermine the DBE. But it is our responsibility also to draw these things to their attention. Then I go to another issue, and I'm talking about general issues that affect us in a way, and questions were asked by yourself and colleagues in relation to lyrics. Now it's very important, and I'm very end of the AG's office. The AG's office will tell you in full treasure that they no longer use any other data other than the data of the Department of Basic Education through LURIC, which is the most credible source of determining what is the apportionment that they have to make the problem. Have the learners' numbers increased? Have they decreased? And how do they allocate? Which means now we have in our possession a reliable and credible instrument which even Treasury uses for allocation. So if the Western Cape, for example, said our enrollment in the province has increased by 38,000 for grade 1, I'm just giving you an example. How do you check the information? You don't ask the head of the department, you check on your LURIC. Your LURIC would say, these are the learners, these are the schools in which they are, and we have verified this data with the Department of Home Affairs. So our information, 98% of our information has indeed been verified, if you speak to you right now, with the Department of Home Affairs, and therefore it becomes a very reliable number. The question then is, what are the hurdles that we've got to cross? LURIC now is in a position to go into its second phase. That will be the most sophisticated system on the continent, I can tell you without a shadow. And the second phase means that it can go live. In other words, in real time, you could do many things. One, you could determine the enrollment of any school at any point in time. You could determine the attendance of all learners at any school at any time. You could determine the reasons why they are absent. You could determine curriculum coverage. You can determine whether indeed learners have received their vaccination and whatever else. Now, who has enabled us to do that? Because we have the platform for it, we have the application. Our key challenge is that of connectivity. Now you might say, well, you know, you should have worked harder on this. Think about it, I think 4 years ago, it was very committee. We had a situation where the Eastern Cape, in terms of connectivity for administrative purposes, was less than 30%. Today is more than 90%. Within 4 years, even this balcony, I think it's a wonderful step forward. We are working extremely hard to ensure that connectivity becomes a reality in the education environment. Now, we might be at 65% or 66%, but I think the question that you ask is an important question. And I think it's most of it is really saying. You see, it's about them. It's about speed, and it's about the cost of data. We are arguing with the department, and we've made an appeal to Treasury, and we've basically put it with these rates issues, to say that our schools basically must be there should be no fee levy on that data for our schools, for education purposes, and the very least. Now, we have this interesting thing, and I'm going to talk about the general things that we deal with the details. The general things affect many, many things. So, for example, we are now digitized. We are digitized. What the digitization does, it allows us on an internet. Digitized content is not just what you see in print, but it's also multimedia, voiceover, interactive. Now that content there can be downloaded and accessible. And we are saying that if that is available to everybody, anybody, you with the reality of a laptop then replacing and replacing the text is real. Because double curve exists within schools in the Western Cape, it does exist within schools in South Africa. Given the fact that there is continuous Wi-Fi data that is available at the appropriate speed and the appropriate bandwidth. That has to become the reality of all our schools. And we are working very, very hard with the Department of Telecommunications, the Department of Communications, with the presidency to ensure that this becomes a reality. Now, it is not within our hands as the Department of Basic Education, but we have to work collaboratively with them. The fact that we've achieved 65% under very, very difficult circumstances is commendable. This is not as much as we are digitizing. Now, what are the benefits of that connectivity? You know, there was a time when provinces would determine what textbooks they could use. So you would have a range of textbooks in the Western Cape, a range of textbooks in the Limpopo, and Gauteng, all of them different. We've realized and we've recognized that the fact that migration is such a huge reality from urban to rural areas, and rural to urban areas, and across provinces. Think about the disadvantage of a child who goes to grade 6 and goes to grade 7. Go to another school, textbooks are different, curriculum, you know, the resource type is very, very different. This child is already a difficult one. And the benefit of a uniform content, a core textbook per subject per grade, is huge. If you go across the country, including the Western Cape, you would find your math, science, and technology is almost universally used for this 4, 5, and 6. Ownership? Department of Basic Education, owner of the technology, and it can be enriched and found through BRC. If you go across the country, look at mathematics and science, grade 10, 11, and 12, one textbook is being used across ownership, Department of Basic Education. Without making a noise, without imposing on provinces, provinces provided that the quality of those textbooks is good and sound, are happy to have a core textbook. The benefit of that is then you save cost, you reduce cost to one-tenth of what you would spend on testing. What is the benefit of centralized procurement? That's the question that was asked by the center. Western Cape joins the National Treasury in centralized procurement for the treasury. They benefited. What did the National Department do? And what did the Treasury do? It does not take away the savings from the Western Cape. It left savings to the Western Cape. The Northwest was going to do so, did not do so, and they ended up paying more and providing less. So the benefits of providing collaborative and consultative of centralized procurement are huge. It's about economies of scale. I'm not saying it must just be done arbitrarily and cold. It's something that requires the agreement. In other words, you must be able to speak. This is the value of being separate. The Eastern Cape went through the same process, and I know because we were responsible for the intervention, and every deputy minister out signed at that time. They argued, and this is the reality in our education. We have Section 20 and we have Section 21 schools. Section 20 schools, the department can provide resources for them, textbooks, etc. Section 21 schools, the governing body can do so. There were many Section 21 schools who said, no, we don't want to be part of a centralized process of procurement. Probably about 68 that wanted us to go to court. In no time, when they discovered that if they go through the centralized procurement, they would be saving so much of money for the benefit of the schools. They don't go through. And today in the Eastern Cape, we have centralized procurement that is providing money, books at a much lower cost to all the schools, and delivery is taking place efficiently. And remember that that promise was under intervention. We confronted with a similar reality in the Northwest, where we have to look at the benefits of the schools and say, what do we do to ensure that we get it cost in a cost-effective way and efficiently deliver to everybody else? So the power of connectivity is this, that even if you have a classroom that has 28 years learners in grade 6 this year, and somebody in 42 learners the next year, and you don't have enough textbooks, because you have a core textbook that is digitized, you can actually print the lesson until the book is printed. So no child will be deprived of a lesson plan or a lesson in the class at any point in time. You'll be able to fulfill that child's human rights. And that is how we have to move forward in relation to that. So I thought that is an important point that we want to make. I'm not going to speak too much other than saying that the sentiment that has been raised with regard to teach development is so critical. I can only but endorse it. And I cannot understand why educators, and I speak now to all of you, not only staff, to all of you, we have agreed that we would create applications that would allow teachers to assess their ability and their content knowledge in a non-intrusive way in all areas. It starts off with mathematics, it starts off with the language. These are available for them to basically say, I'm prepared to assess my content. It's in complete privacy, nobody would know how I've achieved. And on the basis of this assessment, I would be able to determine what kind of interventions should take place to improve my content knowledge. You know, you literally had to drag the teachers from all units to basically undergo the assessment, which are non-intrusive. And I'm saying to you, now suddenly, there's been a huge increase. There it was that sitting at 10,000 rates is now going to be 250,000 or something else, because they're beginning to see, wow, you know, this is so nice. At least I know where I know my content something nobody else knows how to perform, but I know. And suddenly it has gained momentum. And the same applies to your continuous professional development. It took so long for them to do it. And now we've got more than 250,000 educators who are actually have taken up courses, which is a good sign. It's not a perfect sign, but it's a sign of an evolving interest by educators to basically enhance their capacity there. I'll just conclude with the issue of two issues, one of the implementing agents. And it couldn't be so long in the portfolio in the sector. Probably the longest serving deputy minister of education in the history of the country. and probably the shortest serving minister of justice in the history of the country. He's probably better in education than the but what we've learned about this is that unless you basically are willing to dirty your hands in a way, we don't get involved. The minister, the deputy minister, has never yet to be here to stop. We don't get involved in tenders and those matters. That's not our job. So don't ask me who the contracting is, I won't even be able to tell. But the moment there is non-performance, I will tell the BG, I don't only want to see you, I want to see the contractor with their lawyers. With their lawyers. Because we want to know what the cause of that non-performance. And you have to do that. Now that was the position of an implementing agent such as DBS. 5 years ago, and then the recently resigned Minister of Finance, who was then the Deputy Minister of Finance, was sitting with me in the meeting where we were interrogating DBS and its contract. And today the most reliable implementing agents among all those that are available is DBS. Because we were able to in terms of what kind of capacity is required, the legal capacity, in terms of the kind of skill capacity, your quantity surveyors, your civil engineers, etc., etc. And now suddenly they are able to take on the responsibilities which 5 years ago they performed very, very poorly. I don't think we should really just hang an implementing agent. We should give them an opportunity, and if they do not, if they do not perform, that's the end of the story. You can't persist with those people. So that would be, with regard to blacklisting, I mean, to my knowledge, where contracts have been blacklisted by the Department of Basic Education, it applies to all government agencies. It cannot be only for the Department of Basic Education, and it doesn't apply to any other agency. Blacklisting is a blacklisting, and those contracts should basically do that. So I think the issue of capacity is critical, and I think the evidence is here. The Department of Basic Education, our core function as a Department of Basic Education is to implement the curriculum, to ensure that our learners receive quality education. It is less about building schools and bridges and roads. I don't think that is our core responsibility. And it can be the environment for learning and teaching. So this, because the legacy that we have, we are now forced to look at areas that do not really, areas that are not close to our core function. That is another reality, and people must empathize with that. You have a problem now in the office, an intervention takes place. You have to provide your capacity without any remuneration, by the way. We don't receive any extra funds. We're going to take our human resources and our financial resources to assist the Northwest in getting its system on track. We did so in Limpopo, we did so in the Eastern Cape. We didn't do so grudgingly, we did so to the extent that the Eastern Cape that has resisted, you know, Shepherd, how unhappy they were about the intervention in the beginning, and how unwilling they were for us to leave at the end. It simply means that we provide sustainable support. And I'm saying it's a huge task, and I really pity these men and women who are seated out here, because they work extremely hard to make the system as a whole work, whether it's in the Western Cape and whether it's in the Eastern Cape. Now your last thing is, what about the Western Cape and Tent? There's already a conversation there. And they realize, as we do, that in order to have a uniform system to access all the benefits and to be on the same platform, it would mean that there has to be an alignment. I'm not going to predict the nature of the alignment, whether it's going to be called. It may be called another name, but there must be an alignment of the system that should happen. As long as we achieve that without any difficulty, then it's seamless that the Western Cape would have the same benefit as any other problem to access any information and to be able to do what we develop, not for Fountain, not for Limpopo, but for the entire country. Then we are happy. But the conversation is taking place. But I could give you one simple example of a conversation that took place, and I do say not to embarrass anybody else, where officials from the Western Cape were in a district director's meeting. And they were in serious conversation, and in fact persuaded by the system of registration of Gauteng in terms of the newcomers. Now this is what happened at district level. Information is being shared, best practice is being looked at, and people are gaining, the system is gaining from. So we've depoliticized education to such an extent that it doesn't matter whether you're from the Western Cape or Gauteng or anywhere else. These are our children, these are our responsibilities, and we have to execute it. And I think that is how the future of our country should go. It should be education itself is about the best interest of our children, and it doesn't matter where they come from and which party or which government is in control. If we recognize that, then I think we are on our way to success. Thank you very much, Chair. I've dealt with the broader issues, and the DG will deal with the more specific issues that I have been raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. You can get into the simple issues.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Deputy Minister. The problem with the more simple issues, they are about 50. Maybe let me start by saying, and my humble contribution. Why is it not worrying this committee that we spend almost an hour to 2 hours not talking about 78% of learners who cannot read with understanding, but talking about infrastructure and implementing agents? Why is it not worrying this committee? And I'm not saying that it's not a matter that should not occupy the radar of the committee. But I'm saying here is a matter which is not the core business of education, which is now dominating discussions of a committee that should be occupied.
Can I defend this comment? We are here discussing the annual report, you're looking at your target. It's a fact you did not perform well as the target. So there was no way that the committee would put in one, you know, talk to. But for all the members of this committee, they've made sure that we engage in all the issues that you do as a department. But really, on the issues of ACBDG, there was no way that you can escape. There's no way that you can escape. So I just want to correct that and to say, really, the focus of the committee is not on infrastructure. Yes, it should be on infrastructure to make sure that the conditions are conducive for them to learn, but it's all over. We know very well the committee is teaching and learning is current now. And you can take it even from the nature of the comments and the questions that have been raised by the members of the committee. So, really, I would love you to withdraw that one because it's as if the committee is only skewed towards infrastructure, not at all, but towards everything that is happening in the department. But basically, the development of that African child. That's the thing. What is it that we do?
But Chair, why don't you allow me to finish? Because I'm going to a solution, and I'm not blaming the committee at all.
But the way you put it, you blame it. I was not allowed to finish.
No,
maybe the nature that you are working on. That is why I said before I even open up, so that if you can just withdraw that, because that is the picture that you are painting to the committee, of which is not so. That can make things easy and we can continue.
No, I withdraw it. It's unfortunate, Chair. The point that I was making is that in the past, we had similar problems with connectivity. That's where I was going. We had similar problems with connectivity. What did the committee do? The committee liaised with the Committee of Telecommunications. We got all the role players under one roof. And the reason why we've moved with the speed that we have recorded is because of that wisdom. And essentially, that's the solution that I'm offering, that going forward is something that the committee might want to consider. Because it's not the first time. I think at some point, because implementing agents, by the way, is national public web, provincial public web, is the government department on its own, plus others. It is not necessary at some point that we get under one roof and say education and public web. Why don't you get your act together and sort out issues that relate to implementing Asia? That's a humble request that I'm making. But if it is out of kilter, I accept and withdraw. And that was the proposal that I was moving to. Nonetheless, let me start with irregular expenditure. Irregular expenditure, Chair, comes from the MOA, which were not signed and projects were allocated to implement it. That's where the bulk of the irregular expenditure comes from. In fact, at that time, I think later on, that changed, was that if you were engaged in implementing agent and the memorandum of agreement was not signed on time, all the contracts and the expenditure related to it will be deemed as irregular. That's how we landed with such deep regular expenditure that we had from Eastern. I just want to clarify that. But how do you deal with irregular, wasteful, and even unauthorized expenditure? The normal procedure in government is that you institute an investigation. Flowing from the outcomes of the investigation, you then make a determination. One, did government receive value for money? Right? Two, did anyone benefit unduly from the transaction? And I've forgotten the third one, but there are three main things that you consider. The CFO maybe could help me. But from the investigations that we have received, which reports we have forwarded to the chair of SCOPA. I thought we should have forwarded the reports to the portfolio committee as well, which we can do that as well, just forward the report, so that we get a sight of what is contained in this report. So, out of that, then we can act. And if people have, if it's fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the PFMA says they must recover it. And in instances where we're able to recover, we have done so. And there are instances where we have handed over cases to HOC. In terms of the 11 million that is indicated in the presentation, we've been able to recover out of 11 million, 5.9 million. These were cases relating to paying stipends to volunteers. When we appeared to SCOPA, they commended us for the amount that we were able to recover. 5.9 million out of 11 million. And then the rest we handed over to HOCS and the Asset and Forfeiture Unit to recover the rest. So that's how we dealt with it. Now, officials who led to us signing the MOA date in the previous year, because there's nothing that they benefited out of that, the state has not lost money, they received final written warning as part of progressive discipline. Final written warning as part of progressive discipline, because they have not gained anything out of the transaction. And the state has not lost any money. It's just that it's irregular because it's not covered by a signed MOA. That's why it's called irregular. But nobody has benefited anything. And there are different categories of irregular expenditure. There are instances where there is fraud and corruption. But in this case, that's why we've even provided a list of signed MOAs with the date when we signed, the date when the implementing agent signed, to say part of the reason why we are reducing our irregular expenditure by 75%. Here is just a small thing of signing a memorandum of agreement, which was not done on time. Now we've done it on time. And therefore it should mean that we are on our way to getting a clean report. We are on our way to reducing irregular expenditure to almost zero. Now, fruitless and wasteful expenditure of about 400,000. I have indicated that we procured services of a legal firm as an instructing attorney who was involved on the matter before regarding a tender of work goods, where one company, which lost the tender, took us to court. Now we needed to get an instructing attorney to instruct senior counsel and the rest. We used the same company that was involved before in the transaction. Now the view of Treasury was that no. In fact, we shouldn't have used the company. We should have just used our legal services. Our view is that our legal services would have not been able to deal with that matter. And eventually, when the matter was heard in court, the court ruled in our favor, using the legal firm as instructing senior counsel, and the matter was eventually awarded in our favor in court. But there's another step, because the matter went now to the appeals court. And I hope this thing of the 400,000, that Treasury saying is fruitless. Treasury is of the view that it is fruitless and wasteful, because we should have used our own legal services. And we are saying, no, for us to win the case, it would have been well to use the same people that we've been using all along. So that, you know, the briefing between the instructing attorney and senior counsel is insulated. So that's the explanation around the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But we do believe that if we approach Treasury and explain this further to them, they would definitely change it even from fruitless and wasteful to irregular. Because irregular would mean that we didn't go out of business. Yes. essentially, that's what you mean. Which is what is required. The AGSA, hey, I'm very reluctant to comment on this one because you say I must withdraw or I must not proceed. Oh, the
mic.
You
didn't say it on purpose.
No, I wasn't serious. Now, Jay, I don't mind. Now, Jay, a lot of the mishaps happened during the auditing question. A lot of mishaps happened. And I want to leave it there. The least you said about what happened there, the better. I hold the same view as the minister. I said it to colleagues from the auditor general that we have to engage and treat them with respect, because we depend on them on pronouncing on good governance. We've got no choice. You know, we can't do it ourselves. They've got to do it. But the truth is, and my problem is that they continue to happen. For instance, they know the report that they gave to you was not supposed to come here, because we are still discussing the report. Even, in fact, among them, they are even saying, well, it's unfortunate that things do not happen as they were expected, as they usually happen. A simple procedure of exhausting management response before you, we not say it should not come here. Let me give you an example. A similar report popped up in a meeting that I had with the minister when it was not expected. I didn't brief the minister. The minister just saw it with me. And I said, goodness, why are you doing things this way? You know that before you finalize a report, the management response must be solicited, and then you can finalize it and move it on. You don't even have to agree with the management response, but you can proceed. But I'm saying, maybe we must end it that way. We are trying to chart a new way forward. There's a new senior manager who's in charge, and I think we must support him, Joshua. Support him so that he starts moving towards 2018-2019. And this, which comes from 2017-2018, deal with it as best as we can and move forward. Because it might leave all of us with mark and evidence. And I would like to be associated with such. So the point that I'm making is that there were many errors in that. There are two reports, by the way. There's a regularity report, which is 2017-2018. There is something called sector report. Curriculum coverage and others come from sector report. The regularity report, no, fine. We are saying there's no problem. Let's move. We finalize it between us. The sector report has not been properly processed. But because I respect this committee and I respect even the auditor general, I'll just swallow this blow and then move on with them. Because we had made comments to them. They had said to us, we'll come back to you to then show you, you know, the final version of what we're taking forward. That has been interesting. If you are unreasonable, I then chair, I will draw. But so I've addressed the issue of the MOA. And not maybe before I step off the issue of consequences, because there are honorable members who asked about consequences. And I'm happy that they've asked that question, because especially in the presence of the colleagues, because sometimes you don't see a link, and somebody said, have people been given performance bonuses? Sometimes you don't see that link. But I can assure you that the way we've done things this time around, we said previously we've issued final written warning simply because people sleep. You know, they allow things to slip through. And it's not a major error, but to be qualified is serious. we've taken it to scale. I just don't want to discuss matters of discipline in public because it's got undesirable consequences. But I will finish you with details as to what action has been meted out to whom, and that I can assure you, like we did previously, to forward even evidence of the action that we have taken. So the action plan review, well, Chair, I saw that I said the MTSF target, and you asked this question to the Deputy Minister, and I said, no, how can you set targets that your budget does not provide for? Remember, the targets were set beginning of the 5 years, and beyond 5 years, you can't change them. Now, in between 5 years, you lose 7 billion from the money that informed your target beginning of 5 years. Even, I mean, the DA, for the first time, they did not support the budget speech of the minister. And the reason that they cited was that the budget cut, to the best of my recollection. And they said it here in this committee. They said, we are not going to support the budget speech. We don't want you to be surprised, because for the first time, this drastic budget cut, which in our view is unacceptable. Now, how do you meet these targets, as the Deputy Minister says, when midstream implementing targets of the MTSF, then the budget gets cut by 7 billion? How do you meet them? You can't. So changes will only happen after 5 years, which means that's why I refer to 2019-2020 APP. That's where we'll factor in some of these changes. Improving expenditure and accountability, we are trying. I don't know of any department where, you know, a minister, a deputy minister, a head of the department is so involved in trying to deal with implementing agents. And I'm very cautious in talking about this because I will be wrapped around the microphone. It's a problem. It's a real problem. Some of them can't perform. And the reason why you started implementing some of the projects ourselves, we started implementing. We shouldn't be implementing. We should be focused with teaching and learning. There are contractors that we have engaged through our PSU. It says a lot, and this is, I'm just showing frustration. Maybe my problem is that in the past, our solutions came from this committee. And when I vent them here, sometimes I do that wrongly, and it gives an impression that I'm blaming the committee. I'm just saying, we need help. Maybe not only as basic education, as government. How do I go to public work as a government on their own and tell them, you know, how to run their business and so on? But for me, it works better if oversight structures of parliament call us under one roof, and maybe we'll make better progress. The issue of lorries has been addressed by Deputy Minister. Honorable Mukodo raised it. Schools that do not offer IELTS, I'm sure Dr. Mboya would be able to respond to that if she can. But the bottom line is that province is committed. The province, like the Free State, is implementing in all schools. The province, like the Western Cape, is the least implementing province. It's got the least number of schools. Deputy Minister Reid is in the last Council of Education Ministers and supported by other MEPs. So you have that problem. And part of the challenge is, I'm sure, the concurrent functions in Stage 4 of the Constitution. On the issue of streamlining accountability, we try to do that through various forums. Underperforming implementing agents, the MOA that we've included in the presentation provides a better leverage to deal with implementing agents that historically were not performing. We now have a lever to even terminate services with the Tamafut for the first time. We didn't have that before. I can say to public works, no, we can't do business with you any longer. But my difficulty is that in other provinces, of course, outside Afidi, provincial executive councils have taken decisions that there's only one implementing agent in the province and it's public works. And how do we deal with that when public works continue to underperform? Now it means that potentially under EIG, we might continue to underperform because the provincial executive council is taking a decision that in that particular province, public works is the only implementing agent. I've spoken about action that we've taken against officials who are involved. Timelines based on the action plan, well, we're dealing with that in our annual performance plan. Honorable Mugoto, I think I've tried to respond to issues that she raised. Honorable Sonia Bosho, she mentioned Rachunga Primary School in Limpopo. We'll follow up with her to get the details and see what we can do. The same applies to the school from one from the Deputy Minister. We'll follow up with her to get the details and work with Haltian to do those things. The number of teachers who are younger than 30 years who have been appointed, areas of specialization and so on, I'm sure Dr. Hussein will assist you with information. PPP program for teachers who teach learners with special education needs, I'm sure that is readily available from state. Capacity of state development and printed books, we can provide a progress report. Some of the core textbooks that the Deputy Minister, I think, referred to, like your lesson science series, is developed and printed through that, through the state, and we intend to increase this going forward. Capacity to print in Braille, we're looking at two things, deployment of ICT, but also to increase capacity. Our Minister of Arts and Culture, had put together a team to look at this matter. The issue is not about, or maybe let me leave that, it will get me into trouble. Printing of large print books, that has been done to the best of my knowledge in the way of continuing. Well, working with TK and Evolution, I thought it was just a sound advice that don't take everything from this country, which we never do anyway. And we work with all countries in the world. I mean, there's a team that recently went to Finland, will be going to the US next week and so on. We are very careful of what we learn, we don't take everything.
From that point, we're combining anthropology with history. So it means evolution is very, very critical in our approach.
Just on that point, you also forget to mention that the DM, Northern Cape, has the learner who taught the oral history competition nationally. And as DG says, we work all the country. I was trying to solve the learner transport problem that is in Northern Cape. I understand the district director of ZF Mkawi is in France. He received an award because of doping meds and physical district doping meds. I want to know why to France. Is France has it? The France, the donor of the award, and some of the things, as you said, we don't mention the learners who do not read. You also don't mention the good performances.
Yeah, and it's a team that is led by Ms. Jovenka. Last year they were in Finland, this year, Last year, I think they were in the UK. And the year before that, I think they were in Finland. This year, they are in France. So they go from one country to the other. It's part of the incentive of exposing our top performing district managers to other systems in the world that are working. That's what happens.
District managers, not LAM.
Well, Honorable Bishop also raised the issue of learners who drop out, first year learners who drop out at university, whether it's not because of the low pass rate. Well, Umalut was here yesterday, and I think one of the things that they should have shared with the committee is that a research has been conducted which has proven that the national junior certificate is a better predictor compared to the national benchmark test, which is generally used by universities. The better predictor of performance. So why not drop at universities in first year? I think there are many reasons for that. One of them could be that probably learners are not properly supported from Mr. Stephen Masana's report that he presented previously, and others. It could also be that they've not been properly guided to follow the right career and so on. But there are many reasons for that. Not really linked to, I know that when people are about low pass rates, universities have got their own requirements to put in them. It doesn't mean that if you get 30 or 40% you land at university. They've got their own requirements.
Well, the question to be is, you can't have a national senior certificate on the one hand, and you are entitled by virtue of your past. It doesn't say you went to PhD, but you would have to do well enough to start. You can't go with 40%. You require a minimum 60%, for example. That's a reasonable benchmark. But you can't, in addition to that, be obliged to write another assessment test which would entitle you to entry. Now, that's a conversation we must have with our teaching, because you can't create another hurdle or a barrier for entry. So I think that was the question, and I think there was a different question.
But apart from the
Mr.
national senior certificate,
mm-hmm.
I think benchmark test, I don't know of any of all the 2016 that we have. Other than that, the requirement per faculty. I don't know any test for entry. So that's why I address the national benchmark test and nothing else. Okay, that's fine, but we'll address it with universities, the chair. The issue of LTSM, we accept that it remains a challenge in terms of 100% coverage. Part of it is the cost-effectiveness of LTSM, which Deputy Minister has eloquently addressed through central procurement, maximizing economies of scale on our supply chain. And it's actually supported by most, if not all, provinces. Including Western Cape actually jumped onto it. Stationary, they use the arrangement of central procurement. And the PSMA is very clear. If you do not procure from what is cost effective with public funds, you've got to explain why you go for something that is much more expensive as an accounting officer. In fact, it obliges people to go what is cost effective because these are public funds. You can't go for something expensive to say, I choose this one, which I mean, if you're buying something that can set the same price.
But then the issue of the key also in Northwest, whereby the head of the MC Education was saying that basically to build one toilet, they are spending about 1 million rand for that.
You know,
So, I mean, that's the information that you get when you go to, you know, to do oversight. That's what he said. So, that actually makes you, you know, to question whether really do we go for, you know, the most affordable, or people take advantage of the fact that, you know, that the government
and maybe just to add on what Honorable Matthews is saying, she's correct, because we even had an argument where having the Department of Water and Sanitation with us, where that was the discussion, is to say what the department comes up with through your whatever programs, might be, I think it was like, they have to pay, even not coming from their own pocket, but you spend, sometimes you even spend more than what they could spend if they just go to the contractor and say, build a toilet in school one. You know, that is why MEC was saying that really, I think he was trying to motivate us to why they are not in the central procurement program when it comes to textbooks, because came up with that example to say sometimes you even have to pay more. Mm-hmm. That was an example of the toilet that was giving us. That's to say, you can't be paying $1 million for one toilet, or it is something that he sees happening now and again. Whereas if that was upon his own shoulders, he could get this toilet even cheaper than what is there by this time. So I think that is where one of my things comes from.
The fact will show that the inverse is true. If you go as an individual province, it's very rare, because it's economies of scale. In fact, governments in countries like India and China, they tell providers what they pay for goods and services, because they have the economic master. The president, when he was still the deputy president, he said to us in one of the government quarters, that even in the private sector, when you are still running his business and so on, they used to decide how much they pay for goods and services. It's only in government, where government pays for what the market says, we must pay. So if it's like bulk buying that has caused problems in townships and truck shops, the guys are able to come together and buy a bulk, they get the stuff cheap. That's what we are talking about, by central procurement, maximizing benefits of economies of scale. And that's the point that we are making. So any explanation that says if you go individually, you pay a cheaper price, the logic doesn't follow to me, it collapses. But, yeah. Let me see. Maybe Dr. Mabuya will also indicate how many schools have access to broadband. The school safety framework, to the best of my knowledge, Dr. Whitley is here. It hasn't been changed, but he can indicate if there's anything that has been changed from the school safety framework. The last year of Kari Kude was the year under review, to tell me. I don't think we'll see anything of Kari Kude going forward. Chair, maybe I must assure the committee. I have been assured by the team. We were mopping up in the last financial year, you know, the fraudulent claims and all of those things had to be dealt with during the year under review. Beyond that, we don't have Kari Kude anymore. I thought you'd say it must come back, because when we said we bringing it to a dead end, many of you said, how? There's still a need for this, but I'm happy that you're confirming our correctness in bringing it to an end. I've explained the issue of irregular expenditure. Mismatch between spending and delivery. Deputy Minister was quite extensive in explaining that. We've explained how targets are set, how budgeting is done, the effect of budget cuts, etc., etc. It might create an impression of a mismatch there. What steps have been taken against teachers who are not participating in the self-diagnostic test? Remember, this is voluntary. The self-diagnostic test is voluntary. But let me also take the opportunity to explain what the problem appeared to have been. From my engagement with officials and the unions, five teacher unions in education, was that a company called PSN had developed a tool and was actually administering this tool. And unions have a problem with PSN because PSN is involved in private or independent institutions of education. Now, that is any organization that is involved in privatizing education, in their view, in turning education as a commodity that you can sell, they've taken a stance as part of Education International. There's an organization called Education International. And therefore, they influence their members not to cooperate. Now, we said, it probably gives us the opportunity to develop our own self-diagnostic tool. The team was working with the Sasol Foundation in developing our own tool, which will belong to the department, so that we deal with issues as to who's involved, the relationship of whoever is involved with unions and so on. And that's what we have done, and that's how we are dealing with this matter. I hope I've explained that. NSNP, Honorable Nachesi, Dr. Whittle will explain. The variance is insignificant. It wouldn't even account for, you know, days or Easter as well and as well, not fair. 99%.
Some of them are
98%. No, there's nothing more than 99 in all the 9 provinces. And by the way, I would have thought that Honorable Nachesi will chastise us, but commend us that we have reduced irregular expenditure by 75%. I accept that she would want us not to have irregular expenditure or reduce it to zero. But I accept that she's not happy about that and that she's disappointed that we didn't qualify. I must say I'm equally disappointed because we're planning for a claim report. And why we qualify, it's just because of a very small thing of properly accounting for our assets. Getting some of the certificates loaded in the asset register late, some of them not loaded at all. That's the only thing. That's the reason why we didn't qualify. And therefore, it creates problems for your commitment register, for your accruals, etc., etc. The AG has accounted for it as such. But we are determined to get to a clean audit. Maybe an unqualified audit opinion without finding, because I don't know what a clean audit is. Even provinces that, or entities that remain clean audit. Yeah, Honorable Majesty, this thing of the textbooks of the Northwest, you've raised it twice, yesterday and today. And I'll make sure that I really follow it up. But as I said yesterday, when we met with them, as part of the last round of State of Readiness, it was not raised with us. But you are from schools. You came up from schools. So we follow it up. We know even schools that you visited. So we definitely follow it up. Thank you very much. Honorable Judges is not here, but there's something about dropout rate. Yeah, Honorable Machete said the system bleeds about 1 million learners a year. With respect, I beg to differ, Honorable Machete. And I'm sure he allowed to differ with you. And let me explain, maybe the explanation that I've given before, which might have not been as articulated as I should have been. Our major problem is not dropout. Our major problem is repetition. The logic is that if learners do not finish schooling within 12 years, they are trapped in the system. They are there. That's why through the progression policy, we are able to get a large chunk of them starting to move. That's why even our numbers move around 600,000, etc., etc. And they don't necessarily, and I'm also responding to Honorable Mwede's question. Full-time can be have increased, Mr. Panagi, but not yet taken compared to last year. Yeah, they are more or less the same. They are not really decreased. It's very minor. But essentially, they are the same. And the policy on progress learners really helps to move. So the last research, empirical evidence, Honorable Machete, which was conducted on dropout rate, said our dropout rate is between 12% and 14%. That's 12% and 14%. And therefore, which means the problem is not the dropout rate, it's the repetition rate. Learners take much longer to finish the system. And I'm sure we can talk about that in future and say, what are we doing? What are the major issues attributable to that, and so on. Honorable Gutierrez also talked about the PSPs. We'll follow it up in provinces that are involved in instances where he explained this. The EIG does not make provision for staffing for teaching and learning. It, however, makes provision for billed experts. That provision for billed experts, for quantity surveyors, for engineers, but for teachers, it doesn't make provision for that. Yeah, Honorable Gutierrez also asked as to how are we reducing dropout rate. But Deputy Minister also talked about the 3-stream model, which is going to help us to deal with that. The target of 560,000 for Tamaboya and the team, and people like the Vice Chancellor of UCG have been working even last week trying to move towards the 450 target math science related discipline by 2030. So we are working around the clock to deal with that. I've really tried. I think colleagues can just come in areas that they didn't come. I think Dr. Rakumet is here to remind us that we should have.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, just one DG, mentioned the issue of why do you extend the MOEs to 2021. The simple reason is that, okay, the first part was what is contained in an MOA. An MOA is the document that guides the relationship between the two parties. It includes things like how do you fund the relationship, the payment, the program management, and all those issues. But as DG was explaining, the AG raised an issue around MOAs that were not extended on time previously. Now, everything that we did during that period when the MOEs were not in place is irregular expenditure. Now, even for IAs where we have taken away projects from, let's take IDT, you have projects that are completed but are in detention. There might be one run that will be spent on those projects that were completed by IDT. So if you do not renew that MOA, any transaction that you will go into with that MOA will be deemed residential. So we cover that period to ensure that we are not found wanting. Thank you.
Chair, I think all my areas have been covered by both the DM and the DG. All of them.
Chairperson, I would just like to respond to Honourable Boshoff's one question, because I thought the others were equally well covered. But the one question about what would constitute unwanted acts, sexual acts of abuse, I mean, those are the two acts that are covered. What are the problems with the registers? I think the problems are very well known. These are manual registers. They are manual, so they're very difficult to access. I know that the CEO of SAIS and us have been working very closely with the two departments, both DSD and the Department of Justice, so that we can have registers that we are easier, that we are able to access much easier than what we are currently doing. It takes quite long to access and to check people against the registers. And then you had a question about whether this implies that as education we accept relationships between teachers and learners. And I think it's such an obvious response. But you do highlight one of the gaps, I think, in our legislation, Deputy Minister, is that the Employment of Educators Act makes it gross misconduct if you have a relationship with a child at your school, but not if you are if